The James Whale Show.
Come praise the whale.
On Talk Radio.
Mr. Hughes, what's happening?
Now, you're asking me. Somebody asked me, you know, what kind of preparation I do for doing these shows when I'm here. And I didn't.
Same
because,
as me, I expect.
Well, you know, my life is my preparation. Mm. That is my view of it, you know.
You know, that's a very... I'm going to nick there, that. What a good idea.
How much prep have you done for tonight's show, James?
I've read the papers, looked at the news.
I've lived all of these 28 years I've lived. All of it in preparation for this one moment.
I don't think
I've nothing to declare but my character.
And things occur to me, and I look through papers and I see stories while I'm on the air. Things occur to me, and then I sort of, I go with the flow, mate, I tell you. There was another story I was going to do in the papers here. Longest serving cop is 74 years old and he's still making arrests.
Where is he? 74.
I'm going to have to put my glasses
on. He's halfway down the story, I'm sure. My dad was a cop, but you have to retire at 55.
He's a special constable.
He's a special constable.
But at 74, he's also got the MBE and he's in Wiltshire.
Good for him. It's probably keeping him young.
And I was going to talk about that. But things come, you know, into your mind as you're doing it, and you have a few things to start off with. That's how real radio works, isn't it?
Oh, it's how it always used to be, yeah. James. I used to watch you all those years ago in awe when I first arrived
in
London.
The thing that Howard Hughes won't tell you is that I nicked a job off him many years ago, and he's never really forgiven me for it.
No, just seethes away quietly.
Does it really? Listen, I got to go. Howard's here after the news. You have a great weekend. Whatever you're doing, keep it Talk Radio.
No nonsense, no prisoners, no substitutes.
Howard Hughes on Talk Radio.
I was working as a waitress in a cocktail bar, and then I met you. Do you remember that night? Oh, God, we can bear up it. The way we walked out of that place. How are you tonight? Tonight is all about you. It is not, I mean, I know I introduced myself last night, but I don't think we're going to do very much about tonight. Because frankly, as my school teachers used to say to me, Hughes, you've said enough. Thank you very much. Now, tonight is Friday night. It is Howard Hughes here on Talk Radio, and I'm so chilled. My buttocks are stuck to the chair.
Really?
Frozen. Yes, I am chilled. Haley's here to keep me on the straight and narrow. Aren't
my
you?
Buttocks aren't stuck anywhere.
No, it's all right. It's not becoming for you to talk about buttocks, do you? Leave it
I'm a lady. I wouldn't talk about that, would I?
To greasy old men like me. If you want to get in touch with us, there are various ways to do it. And you may well be aware of these ways. Our phone number is 0344-499-1000. You can text us, text talk, and then a space, and you message to 87222. Text will cost you 25 pence, plus your network rate. Fantastic value. And if you want to use the Twitter, then it's at Talk Radio. Those are the various ways to do it, and thank you very much for being in touch. And Paul, thank you for being first off the blocks with a tweet saying great bumper music. Well, that's partly down to me for a database of music, and partly, I have to say, down to Amy, who's doing the technical production tonight. And, you know, unsung hero, you don't hear her. You should, but she pushed the buttons magnificently last night. And look, I am a man who's had years of experience. And somebody said to me, what preparation are you doing for that show that you're doing, filling in for Ian Lee? And I thought, oh, what can I say? Because Haley, and you will verify this, Haley Hayes, my producer, said to me, I know you're used to preparing yourself within an inch of your life and reading newspapers and writing notes. Don't do it. And then I thought to myself, you're probably right. My prep for this show is my life.
I was just going to say that.
That's going to be on my gravestone, you know. His preparation was his life. It'd be too late then for anything. So that's basically where we're at. I'm going to go wherever you're going to take me. There are one or two things that I've got in mind, and we can pick up a couple of things that we talked about last night. Steve, if you're there, for some reason I missed your tweet last night about jingles, and you wanted to talk about those. If you want to phone up and talk about them, I've got a jingle later. Hope we can fit it in for you. I was talking about it last night. And tonight, I've dug it out. It hasn't been heard in years, and you will hear it here. It's one that they don't play in the UK, but I won't spoil it. So let's get our first caller on then, shall we? Yeah, to win the £5,000. Sounds like a quiz show. Let's get our first caller. No, there's no prize. But Alan's on. How are you, Alan, tonight? Alan Keddick.
Not bad, how are you?
I'm very good. You sound very bright and very up tonight, Alan.
Well, it's the weekend, isn't it?
Okay, it sounded like you won £5 on a horse by the sounds of it.
Well, we know Ian went to see Kiss last night. What's his excuse for tonight?
Well, that's the thing. You know, that's a very good question that I hadn't thought of yet. I will endeavour to find out.
Okay, me.
Because, you know, maybe they're doing two nights and he's seeing both of them. Do you think, is that possible, do you think?
Yeah.
I have not got a Scooby-Doo. I'm sure whatever he's doing, it's bound to be great fun.
Amy might know.
Well, yes, so let's...
Amy
can tell me in my earphones. Do you know what his name is?
He's
currently
at another gig. He's at another gig. I don't know who it is.
We're doing the big time.
Dear God. How many gigs does he go to? Does he go to about 10 a year or something? He's always at gigs. God, the last gig I saw was Neil Diamond playing a sports stadium in South Africa.
Oh, I love him.
He did Love on the Rocks.
Oh, brilliant.
Alan, do you know that song?
Love on the Rocks.
Hey, no surprise. Pour me a drink. And I'll tell you my lies.
Yesterday gone, but all I want is a smile.
Hey, your voice has got a bit of a burr to it, you know. Have you ever thought of a singing career?
Well, I'm trying to do karaoke, but I clear the pub out.
I wonder if I'm, yes I am, it's late at night. I worked with a woman on radio called Caroline Faraday, who you might have seen on television. Caroline, lovely person, I've known Caroline since do you know Caroline?
She comes on here sometimes to do showbiz and stuff.
There you go.
I've known Caroline. Because she lives in America now, so
she divides her time between Kent and Los Angeles.
Yeah, she does our like American correspondent type stuff.
Oh, love Kaz. I've known her since she was 17, and I opened the doors of a radio station at the Euston Tower in London to her, and I said, she tells the story much better than I do.
A capital,
yeah. And she said, I said, hello, apparently like that, hello. And she tells people now, Howard Hughes opened the door to me, and he said, hello. But Kaz was the person who insisted that I go to a place in London with her and a couple of other people called School Dinners. Now, do you know what School Dinners is?
Remind me of chocolate concrete and pink custard.
Well, it's a little bit like that, but they serve that to you. And you sit at school desks, and, you know, the waitresses come round, and they're dressed like old-fashioned school teachers, and you're all sort of naughty boys and girls in class. And at the end of it, some of the boys that included me are called up to be spanked, which is a very British thing to do.
Hello.
In front of everybody. And I said to everybody there, I said, I'm on the radio every morning in London. You are not going to spank me in front of all these people. But that was part of the deal, and it's Caroline Faraday who's to blame for all of that. How did we get into this? I don't know.
I'm not really sure. I never know how we get into anything, to be honest.
Well, that's the thing with this, though, late night. Anything can happen.
Well, no, it can, Alan. That's what I'm kind of hoping for, you know. That's the way we do. That's the way we roll, as they say.
And also, I heard you mention you were playing a jingle.
Well, we've got a few. We played mine. Did you hear mine last night? The one that goes, Howard Hughes. Did you hear that?
I listened back on the app this morning.
Mm-hmm. And did you catch it?
Yeah, it was really good. Mm-hmm. I was wondering if you've got any old Beacon Radio from Jam.
I haven't, but I know that this is, for those who don't live anywhere near the West Midlands, that was a radio station that used to exist, that used to be for you wouldn't have imagined that an American West Coast-style radio station with jocks, there was a guy on there called, what was his name, he was very, called KKJ, remember KKJ? KKJ sounded like this, he used to say, all right, have mercy, we're going to be playing the records for you here, Beacon Radio 9, Friday night, all right, let's get down. And he spoke at 1,000 miles an hour, he sounded like that American DJ called Wolfman Jack, but they had these jingles, and they were broadcasting to the West Midlands, weren't they, generally? But
well, the jingles were Wolverhampton and the Black Country.
Exactly, Wolverhampton and the Black Country, and the jingles were straight out of Los Angeles. And what was the slogan of the radio station? You'll know this, Alan.
The sunshine sound.
That's right, the music is the sunshine. You know, they don't do stuff like that these days. It's probably just as well, really. But did you know this, Alan, that Kenny Everett, who's one of my great radio heroes and many people...
A true icon.
Well, genius is the word, isn't it, really? But Kenny Everett traveled to the Midlands once and heard Beacon Radio. And then recorded the jingles and then came back to London and started playing them. He said, oh, this is cool radio station. It's on in the Midlands. It's called Beacon. Ever listen to this? And that's, you know, you don't know any of that, do you?
And also, Kenny Everett was one of the DJs responsible for the first air jingles on Radio 1.
No.
Him and Tony Blackburn.
Oh, Tony Blackburn. Oh, yes, I've known Tony for... How many years have I known Tony for? 30 years now. He never changes. Still
yeah,
mad.
I mean, I listen to him on Saturday morning on Radio 2 doing Sound of a 60.
I wouldn't be doing that, because we've got a great show on Talk Radio then. Give it a try. It's much better. But Tony is... I can tell you this about Tony. The last time I spoke to him, he's a huge fan of Talk Radio, and he loves Ian Lee. Do you know this, Hayley? Tony Blackburn might even be listening now. Tony, if you're listening, I hope you're going to be fine tomorrow. he's a big fan of Ian Lee.
But I'll be listening back tomorrow morning to a DJ I used to listen to on Radio 1.
Who's that, then?
Gary Davis on your radio, yeah.
Gary, I never met Gary. I met a lot of those guys. Mike Reed I know quite well, but Gary Davis has aged fantastically. Gary Davis is probably 60-something now. I don't know, I mean, maybe he's 50-something, but I think he's 60-something now. And he looks incredible. Have you seen pictures now, Hayley, of Gary Davis?
No.
Who's Gary Davis, says Hayley?
I was going to say that, but I didn't want to insult you.
He used to do the bit in the middle on Radio 1 back in the 80s.
Alan, how much radio have you listened to in your life? Do you listen to radio every day?
Yes.
Oh, there you go. He's like me, then. You and I are the same, you know. We're they call them anoraks.
And he's on air at the moment now, but I wouldn't turn over to Radio 2 for Sound of the 80s.
No, I wouldn't be doing any of that.
Listen online another time.
No, listen, the future's in speech radio. Music radio, I'm afraid, is on its way out.
Retro.
Yeah, well, whatever you say, but I think music radio's... When you can get music on any device, like my little phone in my pocket, and I've got one of the cheapest phones that there is, right? You know, I can get music if I want it. My choice from all over the world. So I think that's going to be a big problem for music radio in the future. Unless it's full of personality, like Chris Evans is on Virgin. You know, it's not going to be sustainable.
And Terry Ball on Radio 2?
Well, yes, maybe so. I don't know.
Because they were repeating the same battle they had in 1998. Because Zoe was on the BBC station, and Chris was on the original Virgin.
God, you remember things that I don't remember, and I remember them all. You know, my hero was the guy with the voice, Tommy Vance. Remember him?
TV on the radio.
Yeah, he used to say, and I can only do one phrase as Tommy Vance. Tommy, if you may be too young to remember this, but he had a great voice. And the only phrase I can say as Tommy Vance is, Tom Robinson, 2468 motorway. That's the way he used to say it. And you know, when he said something, you know, it remained said. You know, Kenny Everett used to say, when I play a record, it stays played. But when Tommy Vance said something, you knew that he'd said something. They called him The Voice. I remember hearing him for the first time and thinking, geez, how do you get a voice like that? And so I worked on it, and I never did.
I mean, he was the voice of Friday nights on Radio 1, wasn't he? Mm. But in weekdays, it was Simon Bates.
Oh, Bates. I love Simon Bates. I met Simon Bates first about 20 years ago. And Simon Bates and I were doing a conference, Alan. And I was, what was I doing? I think I was the gob on a stick in the middle, introducing all the people who were there. And I was thinking, what am I doing here? And it was about radio news, the future of radio news. And Simes was one of the contributors there. And there were some really, there were some really boring people from the BBC there talking about, oh yes, the theory of doing this, and we were all going,
were they all from Five Live?
No, I'm sure they weren't from there, they're too funky, but Bates, in the middle of it, passed me a note, and I thought, oh God, I've done something wrong, there's something important. And the note said, and I'll clean it up, this is boring as hell, isn't it? So that's why I love Symes, he's a top guy, so yeah, love his darlings.
I run an old website on the internet called Radio Rewind, which looks back at the history of Radio Rewind.
There, I think, somewhere. I think there's a bit of me there.
On Radio Rewind?
I think somewhere, yeah. On one of my various many radio stations.
What's Radio Rewind? Is it just backwards or something?
Oh, God, it's... No, it's... I think it's a site for...
It's a website.
Memories of Great Radio.
Oh, okay.
Memories of Radio 1 and Radio 2.
Mm-hmm. But you see, one of these days they're going to do a radio... You know, they're going to do a whole website about... Talk radio on DAB. People will be saying, you see, the problem is that nostalgia changes all the time. So when you get to 20 years from now, people will be saying, do you remember that Howard Hughes who did a show? It was Sunday night, wasn't it? God, it was all that stuff about ghosts and stuff. Whatever happened to him? Oh, I think he's in a nursing home now. Really? No, God. Yeah, it drove him insane. Oh, terrible story. I used to listen to that program every week. So you see, nostalgia is not what it used to be, is what I'm saying.
And also, isn't one, what the happened to Ian Lee, who did a show called Late Night Alternative? It was one of the highest rated shows on Talk Radio, and what happened?
No, he kept going to gigs, you see, and he became a professional gig goer and stopped doing his radio show. Now, he's going to be back on Monday, isn't he?
And Kath.
Back on Monday. And high time to you, sir.
They're late nights, aren't they?
Yeah, but they are. I know that. I know. All I can ever be is a very pale reflection. But, you know, I'm doing my best, Alan. Come on now, give me a break.
Yeah.
I'm only a kid.
I mean, your main nights are Sundays, aren't they? I mean, what have we got coming up on the Unexplained this Sunday?
Oh, I don't know whether I'm allowed. Hayley, am I allowed to talk about it?
A little bit. We don't want to spoil it, right?
Exactly. Yeah, thank you.
And Hayley, we've still got tonight to go.
I'll give you two highlights then. I'll give you three. We're going to talk about coincidences.
You went from one to three.
Yeah, it was fine. I mean, you just count. Thank your lucky stars. It's not.
Then talk.
No, she's right. She's just got to be count herself lucky that we're not talking about six. Three highlights. Then we're going to talk about coincidences. I've got a great guy on talking about Canada's Bigfoot. I've never heard anybody talk on radio about Bigfoot in Canada. This guy will. And I've just recorded an interview with Nick Pope about Donald Trump and UFOs. And there's a plan for some people in America. And, of course, please do not do this or anything like it. But they're fomenting a plan on the Internet to storm Area 51, which is where some conspiracy theorists say all the aliens are kept and the spacecraft. They want to do it in September. And people like Nick Pope and myself are saying, please don't do it because you will get yourself shot. So that's among the many things that we'll talk about on Sunday, Alan.
Are you going to listen? All coming up Sunday night between 10 and 1.
Exactly. Have you ever thought of doing what they call promos, promotions?
Or continuity.
Yeah.
I mean, I have cut my hand in presentation when I was doing hospital radio.
You told me about that. Didn't you have a greatest hits from the shows or something, didn't you have?
No, it was a racing show.
A racing show?
A show about horse racing.
Oh, that's right. You were saying yesterday. Did you do tips? Are you a tipster?
Well, I sometimes make predictions, but I normally look at the resemble coverage.
Hmm.
And I would have to say who was doing the commentary before I hand over to him. So like, if it was on commercial TV, I would say it's over to the guys at Channel 4 Racing. Or if it was on BBC Two, it was over to the guys at BBC Racing.
Oh, so you would carry the sound on the hospital radio for people who were in... Oh, that was good. When was that then, Alan?
That was back in 2008.
Okay. And how long did you do it for?
2 years.
Well, you must have been good if they kept you doing it for 2 years.
But the station closed due to lack of money and lack of presenters.
Oh, God.
Because it was a voluntary hospital radio station.
Well, that's strange, because normally, you know, I know a few of the hospital radio stations. I used to appear on Hospital Radio Worcester when I was on Radio Wyvern in Worcestershire, in Herefordshire, was I, and I'd always...
That's another station that's gone. Back Wyvern.
I know it's gone now, but, you know, it was in Barrowbourne Terrace there, and everybody used to talk a little bit like... Well, no, they weren't pirates, but, they didn't talk like... But it was all kind of, I listen to the Wyvern, you know? They've got that, guy called Howard Hughes here. I don't think he's as old as he sounds, Harry Potter. back in the day. I mean,
sounds
listen.
A bit like Hagrid.
Exactly. There's a, what's that guy? We used to have him on the Sunday night show that I won't name a lot. The Reverend Lionel Fanthorpe, lovely man, had some health problems lately, so you don't hear him on radio. But his voice, if I go really close to the microphone, he used to say, you see, Howard, the line between life and death, between being in the instant and being somewhere else, is gossamer thin, and sometimes late at night, perhaps when you're walking along a long and dark and lonely road, the line is crossed between here and there. But sad. Lionel, if you're listening to this in Cardiff, we still love you and would love to speak to you again one day if you can do that. Lovely man.
344-991-1000 if you want to call in.
Exactly. I love this man. You could.
We can just go home, can't we, really?
I don't want to do myself out of a gig or anything, but I think the next time that that Ian's gone to some concert, we want to get you in to do the show.
We'll have to arrange transport to get me all the way from Birmingham.
Well, we sort that out. You know, they've got deep pockets here. It's all right. I'll ask the boss. I've got an in with the boss. And what I say, he listens, you know?
But
so if I say, let's get Alan to do the show, we'll get some motion on that.
But I think Ian might object to it.
you'll object to it.
No, Ian might.
Ian. He might. No. I don't think he would. He's, you know, he's a very nice man. He'll roll with, he'll go with the flow. Whatever I say. You forget. You know, you're not aware of the amount of influence that I have here. People say, Howard, what do you think of this? And they listen. And then they forget. Alan, it's lovely to talk with you.
Speechy soon.
Okay, what are you, just before you do go, what are you doing at the weekend then, Chuck?
Well, I've got the paper one on the mornings. And Sunday I'll spot the choice sport-wise, because we've got the Wimbledon men's final, we've got the Cricket World Cup final.
That's true.
And we've got the British Grand Prix at Silverstone.
God, and do they, have they been timed so that they fit in one with another? Is it all for television?
I think we're all on at the same time.
Okay. Well, listen, have a lovely weekend then, Alan. We will talk again in another 6 months or so.
I'll speak to you soon.
The Lord willing. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
That's our friend Alan, who's very good at kicking us off here, getting us going. Roger, thank you very much for your tweet. Nat says, I remember when, you see, we're doing a lot of recollections and reminiscences here, Hayley. You hate those, don't you? I remember when I met my radio hero, Howard Taylor. I used to listen to him as a child and absolutely loved him. I met him at the local community radio station in Swindon. Oh, where I am part of the drive team between 4 and 6 on Swindon, whatever it is there. Nat, thank you for that. Howard, I've never heard of Howard Taylor. Anybody call Howard, though, is good in my book. Lee, nice to hear from you, says, I remember that radio station, the West Midlands. I remember the ghost hunting thing they used to run on a Friday night, Saturday morning. I thought I was first doing that, Lee. Oh, God, that's depressed me now. Who else is here? Scroll up, scroll down. You see, I'm still learning how to use all of this gear. Oh, no, I'll do some more of the tweets and texts and stuff. Well, there's one other one here. Oh, good. Paula in Blackpool, she texted at the weekend, and I dedicated the show to Paula. You were in hospital in Blackpool, and I speculated that you might be in the Promenade Hospital, but I've been reading up, there's another one, isn't there, the Victoria Hospital. But whichever one you were in, I'm glad you're out. I think you said you were due to be out on Thursday, that was yesterday, and you say it's good to be back home. It always is, isn't it, when you've been, you know, away or in hospital or anything. And she says, Paula says, talk radio is my constant companion. Well, Paula, we don't normally do this, but I'm going to dedicate tonight's show, as well as last Sunday's, to you. And thank you for getting in touch, and I hope you're going to be absolutely, as a man on the radio used to say, I hope you're going to be fighting fit very soon. Okay. Well, that's Hagrid again, isn't it? Paula, thank you. This is Talk Radio. My name is Howard Hughes. If you want to talk with us, it's 0344-499-1000. Do it now.
No nonsense, no prisoners, no substitutes.
Howard Hughes on Talk Radio.
Because I'm happy. Clap along if you feel like a room without a roof. Because I'm happy. Clap along if you feel like happiness is the truth. Because I'm happy. Clap along if you know what happiness is to you.
Hello. Did I step on your toe then, Hayley? Sorry, I was
maybe
dancing.
You asked me a question and I answered you, but without realising the lights were on.
No, I said, who was that?
Yes, yeah, Pharrell Williams.
Pharrell. Come on now. None of your Pharrells.
Sorry, Amy.
Pharrell.
I was a bit quicker than Amy was.
That's all right.
I'm so sorry.
No, it's okay. You've gone red. I thought you were unembarrassable.
I know. Well, I thought we were fair.
Right. Just say Pharrell Williams again
Pharrell
for me.
Williams.
You're Pharrell Williams. Not Farrell.
I don't know.
Oh, well, in Liverpool, he's probably Farrell.
I apologise to him.
But then, you know, in Liverpool, everybody's Darrell or Farrell.
Amy's laughing like I've just said something. I probably sound like a really old person that doesn't know who Pharrell Williams is.
No, he's a cool dude.
Oh my God, did she just say Farrell?
In fact, that song has particular associations with me because I was working at the time. I'm always working on some radio station. I was on a radio station in the Thames Valley during all the terrible floods. I think about, was it 2015 or 14? I forget, it's all a blur. 14, I think. And I was the poor, unfortunate person sent out to get myself in place. What was the name of that town near Windsor? I was reporting from there live. No, it's begins with a W. It's got a TW postcode, a London postcode, but it's near Windsor. And I've forgotten the name of it. But that song was always playing on the radio when I was up to my knees in mud. and sometimes up to my knees in mud and ice as they were bailing out these communities by the Thames. If you live in that area, you might remember the floods. A lot of people won't forget them. I remember standing by, I mean, just by the by, nothing really, but I've never seen a river flood like that. The Thames down certain parts near Windsor was flooding so fast that I went to visit a lovely woman who, again, head like a sieve, I can't remember her name, but her and her husband, and they were probably early 80s by then, they were lovely people, had bought their dream house by the Thames. And the waters, of course, had come very close to it. And they had a boat. And the boat was tied down at a little mooring right next to the house. And the Thames was running so fast that the boat looked like it was a speedboat going through the water. It was that bad. It was an amazing time. But Pharrell, whenever I hear Pharrell Williams, I always think about being up to my ears in mud. And I remember also, I think engineers are the same throughout radio. The engineer for the station who carried all the broadcast equipment, we couldn't get around by walking. We had to use a boat at one point. And, you know, these are places that are normally dry, okay? So we had to, we've borrowed somebody's boat. We put all the broadcast equipment in there. And then the engineer, who I won't mention here because even he may be embarrassed, sat in the boat with all the equipment while Muggins here got a rope and pulled him through the water. I nearly did my back in, health and safety. So that's why, you cut a long story short, that's for Pharrell Williams, for me. One thing I wanted to talk about, and Haley, if it's all right, Haley's my producer. Everything has to be cleared with Haley. I wanted to talk about, James started talking about this at the end of his show, the way that we treat each other these days. You know, we were sort of starting to get into this, and James' show ended, and I thought that's worth picking up. People just are so busy now that in many parts of the country, like the big cities, London, I think, is you know, a place like that. Although there's a heart in the city of London, you just gotta look for it. People don't bother with each other. They don't. They don't interact with each other. There's no laughter. They're looking away from each other. London's always been a bit like that. I think it's even more so now, but there was a great thing that happened on the train. And I sat there on this sweltering carriage on the way in tonight, thinking there is a hope for this world somewhere. This guy, he must have been from one of the African countries, and I think possibly one of the Central African countries. I know South Africa. I think he was from Central Africa. Dressed very smartly, wearing a waistcoat and a lovely white shirt. And he gets on the train. The train is well delayed. It's probably 15 minutes late. And he's hot and bothered like I am, and we're both perspiring somewhat. And he flops down on the seat. Bang, like this. And he looks at me and looks up to the sky and says, "Thank you, Jesus." And I looked at him, he looked at me, and we both started laughing. And I just thought that was a classic moment, because those sort of things just don't happen anymore.
Yeah.
You know, there was him and me. We were both looking at the watch thinking we're going to be late. We were both perspiring profusely. But we got some fun out of the situation. He just sat down and flops like, boom, "Thank you, Jesus." No, wait, little man. Small things amuse small minds, I know. Who else have we got on here? Oh, you've got a note. Hi, Haley.
Oh, hi.
I dated a Haley once. Are you the same one? Well, I mean, listen, how many statistically?
What's the name? Tell me the
how
name.
How many, yeah, we've got to know more. Do you want to know the person's name? This person's called Please Can We Be Friends?
Don't really give it away. I'm going to take a stab at no.
Okay.
But you know.
Well, I don't know. I mean, if you want, are you okay with this person revealing himself?
Well, not in front of me, no.
No, revealing his identity. Look, I'm such an innocent.
I don't know what you're asking me.
Yeah, it's interesting, though, your mind goes straight there.
Jump straight to it.
Your mind's like a laser. It goes straight below the belt. I was thinking reveal his details. Not his credentials, his details.
Details?
Yeah, his details.
You keep dropping your T's.
I know. Well, I can't help it. I'm just ignorant.
Whoever you are, get back in touch. We'll find out more. Give us a call.
Hey, Nick's in Windsor. Nice to hear from you. It was Raisbury, but I also went to Datchet. You're right, but thank you. Yes, you said Raisbury, spelt with a W and with an R as well. Raisbury is a little village in between Heathrow Row Airport and Windsor. And people often forget about it, but it was in the news 2015, 14, whatever it was. And I was there up to my knees in mud, reporting into various shows, talking about how bad it was for people. And it was as well. I mean, there were some stories there. There were parts of the country that you think, well, you know, Windsor, they've all got money and it's like that. But my heart went out to some of those people who spent the next couple of years, you know, clearing the mud and filth out of their homes after that. So let's hope we don't have much more of that. Sorry, it was just a little news item there for you, if you've got any more like that. If you want to call and save me from myself, it's 0344-499-1000. My name is Howard Hughes, the last time I looked. Can we get Natasha on then? Yes, I'll just need a, because, you know, I'm very new to all of this. Let's talk to Natasha. Natasha, are you there?
Hello.
Come in the Greek jury. Where are you from, Natasha?
From Kew.
All right. Well, it's nice to speak with you. You're very near Richmond then.
Very near, yeah.
Well, I passed through there on the train tonight. I might even have seen you.
You might have done.
You might have done. Come on, Natasha. Stranger things have happened. Do they call you Tash, or do you like to be Natasha?
I don't mind.
Okay.
I don't mind. Tash or Natasha.
Okay. And which particular avenue of conversation would you like to take me down?
Well, okay. It's a weird one. It's a very weird one.
Okay. We like weird.
You can't smile because I think it's kind of your thing.
Mm-hmm.
But it's something really weird happened to me about 25 years ago. And I've told people about this, and I've never, ever, ever got to the bottom of what it was all about, but it was very, very strange.
Really? And was it in Kew?
Yeah. No. So I was working in central London, mm-hmm. and it was a Friday afternoon, and I wanted to get some things from Debenhams on Oxford Street. So I went to Debenhams, and I was sort of browsing the ground floor. And then I noticed there was this group of people. There was about maybe 8 women and 1 man. And the man was sort of like, well, what happened was I was browsing, and like, you know when you can just feel you're being watched?
Yeah, I mean, that's a scientific phenomenon, that you can actually feel people's eyes burrowing into the back of your head.
And there was, I can't remember the exact number, but it was about 8 women. It was definitely 8 women. Let's say it was 8 women and 1 man. And I just had this feeling, and I sort of was moving around. Wherever I moved to, this group of people would kind of like, they'd stay in the distance, but they would sort of follow me.
Hmm. Were they together? Were they a group who were together, or just separate people?
It was like a huddle of 8 women and this 1 man.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, so I was very aware that I was being watched, and I felt a bit sort of like, okay, it's a bit strange. And after about 5 minutes, so, you know, they'd taken their time, after about 5 minutes, 2 of the women came over to me, and they said to me, oh, hi, look, you've probably seen us watching, I'm really, really sorry, we don't want to scare you or freak you out, but we're just looking at you, and you look exactly like somebody we know, and we actually can't get over the resemblance. So I said, oh, okay, well, you know, obviously I'm not that person. And they said, okay, well, look, we'll leave you alone, really sorry. They went away. This happened 5 minutes later, they were watching me again. Next time, 3 of them came over and said, look, we're so sorry, you must find us really weird, but we cannot believe you are literally the twin of this person we know.
And who did they think you looked like? You know, was it somebody famous like Jerry Halliwell?
No, just somebody they knew, but it was all a bit vague, but they were very, very insistent. Anyway, so this happened again, same conversation. They said, look, we're going to leave you alone, really sorry, get on with your shopping. Went away, and this happened every time. More of them would come over and sort of surround me. So I thought, okay, this is really weird. And they were so insistent that I was this doppelganger. So anyway, the final time, the man came over, and I was kind of surrounded by this group of people. And they were all, you know, it's like they're in your personal space. It's a little bit, but they're not quite sort of like too much in there.
And it gets to the stage where you think, is it time for me to say something about this?
Well, no, because it was very, very carefully done. And very obviously it was rehearsed.
And this was all in Debenhams?
All in Debenhams.
Were they a flash mob?
Well,
remember flash mobs?
No, it wasn't.
No, they weren't a flash mob, all right.
I don't, well.
I'm sorry, we're spoiling your story, sorry.
What was happening was they were surrounding me, and it was all very, it just felt like I knew that something weird was happening. Anyway, this man came over, and he was very, very charming. And he said, look, we just watch you, the way you move, the way you speak, the way you, everything about you is just, and talking, sort of trying to, I suppose, arouse my curiosity about it. So then he said, look, you know, this is really, really, it's going to be a bit weird, but would it be possible to take your number? Because we really think that you should meet this person. And all the group was sort of nodding, saying, yes, you must, very persuasive. So I said, okay, well, if you give me your number, I'll call you.
That's not a good idea, though, Tash. I don't think... I'm sorry, I called you Tash there. It's not a good idea because they could give you a fake number. And you could give them your real number.
Yeah, but I didn't want to give them mine. So I just said, look, you give me your number.
And I'll call you. I've got it, yeah. Don't call us, we'll call you.
And so they... Yeah, exactly. So then they were like, oh, no, look, you know, can we not, you know, get in touch with you? And I said, look, I don't have a phone at the moment, so let's give me your... Write your number down. Wrote their number down, and then I went home, and I was thinking, that was really weird. Told my mum, I phoned my mum, and I explained what had happened, and she said there were these groups of people who took... Because I was about 21. I was about 20. And apparently, that's what they do. They go, and they kind of, like, see somebody who's very young, and they will use that sort of line, and it's almost like a cult. But I don't know. It's not... I mean, she was just guessing this. But have you ever heard, or has anyone ever had that happen to them? Because I have never got to the bottom of it.
And I mean, look, being slightly, I mean, it sounded amusing at the beginning, but being slightly serious about this, it is the kind of thing that I've read about, that some kind of foreign religious cults use in other countries to try and recruit young and vulnerable people. So you always have to be very careful. You know, I tend not to divulge anything, and if anybody asks for my phone number, I either don't give it to them, or if I think that they might be legit, then I will give them... I've got a second mobile, you know, pay-as-you-go one, that I use for things that I'm not sure about or things that I've signed up to. Because you're looking at Mr. Suspicious here, you know, because my dad was a copper, and you don't trust anybody. So I give them that number. But you have to be careful. So did anything happen after that, or did you... get away with your life?
I don't know what I did with the number. I think I was quite scared. Because what they were saying was, look, you call us and then we'll arrange a time for us all to meet so you can meet this person.
No.
So is it a kind of like a sort of devil? My mum has said, look, that you do get these cults who then you hear about these disappearances.
You do. And how old were you? Remind us.
I was 20. I was about 20.
So you were young. You know, really young. And I'd say vulnerable too. And even though there are loads of people around, we all know from many famous cases that bad things can happen in places where there are a lot of people. Why? Because everybody's got their own business to get on with, and they would just walk past that. So you could have been snatched up. I mean, look, I don't want to frighten you, but you could have been snatched up and taken out of there. Please tell me that you told the coppers. Did you tell the police after that?
No, I just didn't. No, I was kind of curious about it, but I didn't kind of think, I probably would now if it happened, but I'd think, yeah. But I suppose back then, you know, I wasn't really aware. I knew there were cults in London and stuff.
Well, there are plenty of them, and the problem with it is that, you know, young people who might be not going through a good time at the moment, they're looking, everybody's looking for something, right? That's a line from a song, but everybody is looking for something. And so if people like that catch you at a time when you are vulnerable and receptive to them, even the most level-headed, sensible person, and I'm talking about, you know, I am Mr. Skeptic, you know, I don't waver by a quaver, right? But even I could be affected if I was feeling particularly low or down or vulnerable. But you have to do that double take and think, are they on the up and up? Because the truth is, a lot of people are not.
And also because it was very persuasive, they did it in bit by bit, so piecemeal, one in the wake, then two, then three, and the surrounding me, and the persuasive, and oh my god, and the flattery, oh but you look so nice, and then finally the man, why did he have so many women? Probably to try and lull me into a false sense of security, where if it had been all men doing that, obviously I would have...
Yeah, you wanted you to run a mile, quite rightly.
It must have happened to other people, I can't have been the only one, and Oxford Street is such a target area.
Well, look, I mean, the great thing about doing this show is that there is certain broadcasting organizations say there's a diverse range of demographic, I think that's the word, and people listening to this. So I would guess if I put that out there, let's punt it out and say, has anything like that ever happened to you? And perhaps, you know, there may be people who weren't as lucky as you. Listen, I have known people who have found themselves, and, you know, we don't want to go, I mean, it's a Friday night, we want to be happy. But I'll just say this, that I have known people who've been suckered into cults, and they've got into them very easily. Then they've come to be, there's a dependency thing that starts. They begin to trust them. And it's not until way down the track, when it is too late, that you've given up a lot of your freedom, your independence, that you realise that those, well, it's not you who would realise, it's people around you and who love you realise that they've got you. So I think you have a very lucky escape there.
Well, I think so too. And it's, I'm like you, I am very, very suspicious. Especially that I can smell a rat very quickly. And even though I was really young, I knew that there was something very, very, because it was all very, it just, even though it was kind of natural, it also seemed very calculated as well. And just the way, you know, when somebody's trying to sort of convince you to do something, the way this man was saying, oh, but you know, you just got, you won't believe your eyes when you see this is your twin. And but he was doing it in a very sort of natural way.
Well,
but
a lot of us do have, you use the word doppelgangers, and I'm sure, you know, our listener knows what a doppelganger is, but that's a double. I am supposed to have a double. There's a guy who actually reads the news occasionally on this radio station now from IRN, Kevin Gover. And Kev's an old friend of mine. And Kevin texted me one day a few years ago and said, I have seen your spitting image on a train near, what's that place near Southampton, the railway place? It's halfway between Southampton and Winchester, Eastleigh. I've just seen you on a train like Eastleigh. They used to call it Beastly Eastleigh. Beastly. It's a lovely place, by the way. He said, I've seen your double. He said, but he's got three kids, but it was you. I said, well, I haven't got three kids that I know about. There is a guy on radio who's said to look a bit like me. I look like a slightly fatter version of a man called Alex Dyke. Check out Alex Dyke. He's a good friend of mine. He's an anorak. He may even be listening to this. We all have that. But listen, had a lucky escape there, Tash.
I might not be here or might be part of that cult thing there. So, if it was a cult, it must have been.
I mean, I don't want to sound like your dad or your older brother, but, you know, always be careful about stuff like that. Because often people are not what they seem to be. And even if that means we miss an opportunity to form the greatest friendship of our lives, I would rather that you or anybody else was safe than get sucked into something bad, you know? I never thought we'd be going down this road tonight.
It's good that I'm telling people about this just in case it happens to them.
Yeah, thank you for that.
You know.
Well, it's a weird story.
I've been listening to you since I was probably about five.
Oh, my God.
I have, always. You didn't do the flying eye. That was somebody else.
No, that was Russ Kane, who also broadcasts on this station. That was my good friend, Russ Boy.
Who else was it, though? There was somebody else.
Well, there was me, Howard Hughes, doing the news. This is a radio station that used to be on air in London with Chris Tarrant doing breakfast, me doing his news, and Russ Kane up in the flying eye in the days when radio stations could afford helicopters and planes to do news on the travel.
So I think I've got you on tape.
Oh, well, I'd love to hear it.
I don't know where it is, it's probably in storage, but I used to record Capital, jingles and stuff like that. It's cold outside, but it's warm in here.
Okay. 194. Listen, stay where you are, because this is an interesting, this will reveal to our listener some of my sordid and checkered past, I think. So Natasha in queue, near Richmond, hold on, and we'll take some commercials and be back in just a second here on Talk Radio. Our number is 0344-499-1000, if you want to join the party.
No-nonsense discussion.
Howard Hughes.
On Talk Radio.
Lily Allen. I think she's a poet. That is a great tune, and thankfully we played the clean version. otherwise, I wouldn't be making any more appearances on this radio station, thankfully. Howard Hughes here, the greatest bumper music in the world. We heard a little promotion for Penny Smith. I had breakfast with Penny Smith last year in a hotel in Leeds.
Oh,
can I tell that story?
Oh.
I was doing the voiceover, and I am available for these things, for the ARIA Radio Awards 2018. I don't know why they asked me. They probably won't ask me again, but I had to do the, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome, and so-and-so, so-and-so is the winner of the award for the loudest, most irritating voice in the world. I had to do all of that. And Penny was one of the people who was presenting awards. So we were both booked into the, unbeknownst to each other, into the same hotel. And I'm picking up my breakfast, and I got a copy of the Yorkshire Post, and reading the local, always buy the local paper, wherever you go. So I got the Yorkshire Post, and I'm sitting down there with my eggy breakfast. and my black pudding and my sausages.
You like black pudding? Hang on, stop there.
Do you like black pudding?
No.
How can you not like black pudding?
Oh, it's not. You don't eat that stuff.
Oh, come on now. Black pudding is one of life's great joys.
Really?
Yeah.
It's because you're a northerner.
I am a northerner, yes, but please don't throw that at me. I'm very proud of it, excuse me. You know, I go up to Liverpool like I did the other week, ends up talking like that. But black pudding, black pudding is pudding. Lovely. Yeah, black pudding. Because all you've got to do is just think to yourself, this is not made of blood. And if you think to yourself, this is not made of blood, then you can eat it. Go on, dab a tomato sauce and a bit of black pudding. Anyway, breakfast with Penny Smith. I'm having my breakfast and I look across and I think, that's Penny. And I said, hello, Penny. And Penny looked up with her glasses and said, hello. And we sat and had a lovely breakfast. Any time I've ever had breakfast with Penny Smith. But it was a charming experience, if I may say so. Back to Natasha. Tash in Kew, near Richmond in London. So anyway, you got this collection of recordings that include me then, Natasha?
Well, I don't know where they are. They're in storage.
Okay.
I actually went through all my cassette tapes because some of them were broke. But I used to spend hours just making music compilations, just jingles, loads of stuff. So hopefully I've got them somewhere. If I dig them out, then definitely I can share them.
Okay, no, I'd like to hear that because, you know, working with Tarrant, there was never a dull moment, Natasha.
It was
quite an experience.
Good. It was so spontaneous and natural and kind of, now it's all a bit too structured.
Well, I think a lot of music radio is like that because it's a business, I suppose. We were a business too, but I think it's much more of a business these days and people don't get the freedom that we had. You know, people used to say to me, so Howard, you and Tarrant this morning, I don't know how you get away with it. And they'd say, how much preparation do other radio stations would say, how much preparation do you do for that? And the pair of us, we never prepared a conversation ever. I'd just look at him and he would look at me in the morning and he'd know if I, if I was not in the best mood, and I'd look at him and I'd know if he wasn't in the best mood. And we'd balance each other out every morning. It was, I don't think there's anything quite like that now, but if you get, I mean, I'm going on now, aren't I? But if you get the chemistry on the radio or anywhere right, it's a magic thing. And you just have to, I'm from the other side of the tracks, he's highly successful, broadcaster for great esteem, and I was somebody who'd been doing radio news for years, almost anonymously. But the two of us just hit it off, and we shared the same sense of humour, which was basically just silly and absurd. And that was it. And other people bought into it. So I'm thrilled that you got tapes, and one of these days I'd love to hear them.
Yeah, I'll try and look for it, because I've got, do you remember Anna and Capital Doc?
Yes.
Wednesday.
Oh.
That was so good.
Anna Rayburn.
Anna Rayburn. I didn't catch that. I love Anna Rayburn.
That was one of the first, I think that was one of the first kind of agony aunt phone-in shows. And I was so young. I learned so much.
Did your parents let you listen to that? Because some of it was a bit, it was a bit clinical.
I don't think they knew it was on. I think I just listened to it.
Yeah, Anna would get stuck right into all of these things,
And the doc, I don't know who the Capital Doc was.
I can't remember who the doc was.
No. Then Greg Edwards on Friday night.
Oh, lovely Greg Edwards.
Amazing.
What a nice, nice man.
Yeah.
And, what he doesn't know about soul is not worth knowing.
Yeah.
He's still around. Greg Edwards, if you check out online, I think he's doing stuff online and various other things. He's a top guy.
Yeah.
But all of those jocks who were the DJs from that previous era, they were like heroes to me. I used to come down to, I won't go on about this because it's boring for some people, but I used to come down to London and I was so shy. I was too shy to even go into that building and get a car sticker. That's how shy I was. But I used to look at the pictures of the famous people outside there. Tarrant and Kenny Everett and people like that were on the front. And I used to think, I'll never work at a place like that. And then I get on the train back to Liverpool and go back to school. And I ended up, fate being fate, working there. So nice that you remember that. And nice that I can tell you a little bit of what it was like. In those days, we used to do shows from every corner of the world. We went to Hawaii. That was my first trip abroad. And Lapland and South Africa we went twice and Australia three times. And it was all on the company.
Was that at Capital Radio?
Yeah, no, it was back in
those days. Was that at Christmas, when you used to go to Lapland?
We went to Lapland at Christmas, and I was telling somebody here.
You used to take somebody, let you take the person who won the competition.
That's what I was telling Hayley during the commercials, that we used to take what Tarrant used to call, we're going to take the lucky prize winners with us, and we're going to be, when you hear us next on Monday, we're going to be live from Lapland. And we'd take the lucky prize winners, who were always people who were completely into the radio station, so you'd have a great time with them. Yeah, and we'd have a blast. And they'd go home and say, oh, that Howard Hughes, you know, he wears red jelly sandals, which I did at one point. And I say to my utter eternal shame. And that became a standing joke on the show, that Howard Hughes wears jelly sandals. But anyway, look, back in those days, there were radio stations that were for particular areas. That one was for London, so they had Tarrant. Liverpool had another one, and Manchester had one, and Birmingham had another one there, BRMB, and I worked on that. It's not like that these days, so they're great memories to have, you know.
Yeah, they would. Well, I used to also love LBC when it first started. I used to ring up. I used to love going on the radio, and so I've always called up ever since I was quite young. And I remember doing it on LBC when he...
I think that station's probably closed down now. It's been overtaken by talk radio.
Completely different now, yeah.
I know. I thought it had closed myself. But anyway, sorry, you were saying.
I used to like calling up and doing a mystery guest thing. And yeah, it was such a magical thing. I think more people should listen to the radio.
Radio is... I had a boss, a Scottish gentleman, who used to say, oh, Howard, radio, theatre of the mind. And it is. That's why when I do the show on Sunday that I won't name now, one of the first lines I say every week that it's theatre of the ears. Because it is. You know, you can't see me, unless you see any videos from this show, and I don't think they'll post any, but, you know, you can't see me unless you go online and check out photos. One person has sent me a photograph of myself, which is my old BBC photograph. Where did you get that, CJ? God almighty. You know, we can be anything. We're a voice. And I think there's a comfort in that. You know, I was like that. I was, you know, a boy in the darkness with my Grundig radio, listening to people telling me things. I don't think there's anything greater than that. You can see pictures until you are green in the face. But radio and the words that you use on radio to describe the things that you have experienced and you know, nothing, I don't think, beats that. And that's what educated me. I went from a secondary modern school in Liverpool to university. Because radio educated me. That's what it does, Natasha. So I'm with you all the way there. All the way to Q.
Yeah, that's nice.
All right, well, one of these days I'll hear the tapes, and you have a good weekend.
Yeah, I'll have a look and then see if I can get something together.
Please do. And thank you very much for calling tonight. That was nice of you.
Thank you.
Okay, take care. That's Natasha, or Tash, in Q. Well, in Richmond, actually. Lou... talking about, I know we've only got seconds to go before the news, but Lou says, black pudding, disgusting. Lou, how can you say that? You've never enjoyed it done properly. And when I did that show on a Sunday night that I won't name, a few weeks ago from Liverpool, my breakfast was replete with black pudding, and it was great. And you just put a bit of red sauce on it, and you are laughing. Hayley doesn't look impressed at all, Hayley.
Red sauce or brown sauce? That's the question.
Well, that's another question, really. Are you red sauce? I'm asking you, my listener. Are you red sauce or brown? I tend to be red sauce. And I have no idea what that says about me. Perhaps we'll find out in the next hour after the news. Our number here is 0344-499-1000. Be here.
No nonsense. No prisoners. No substitutes.
Howard Hughes on Talk Radio.
This is a tale of for the next 60 seconds, the station will conduct the test of the emergency broadcast system. This is only a test. This is a test of the emergency broadcast system. The broadcasters of your area in voluntary cooperation with the FCC.
In the event of an emergency,
if this had been an actual emergency,
you would have been instructed where to tune in your area
for news and official information. This concludes this test of the emergency.
WATN, Syracuse.
Probably many other stations as well. We were talking about jingles, and since I was about 16, you look shocked, Hayley.
That was the best thing I've heard, I think, for 6 months. Seriously, I need to... We're going to play that again at some point. That was
35 years of my life trying to find that jingle. That jingle is an American jingle. They have this thing in America because they don't have, like, one big national station like talk radio. They have lots of stations in different places.
Yeah.
So if there are emergencies, like somebody drops the bomb, you know, from the sky, or there's a natural disaster or something like that, they've got to bring all these little local stations together to give people news and official information. And it's called the Emergency Broadcast System. It still runs. But it being America, they thought, oh, well, we can't, you know, it's very boring if you sit there.
We have to harmonize it.
So we've got to put it into a jingle. And I think maybe Kenny Everett used to play that. But Steve England, on a radio station in Manchester that doesn't exist anymore, that was called Piccadilly. I was only talking to a friend about Steve England today. He is the jingle master. Steve England used to play that on his show when I was a kid. And I remember recording it, and I only got half of it. So I spent the next three decades until very recently trying to find the Emergency Broadcast System jingle. And that's it. Can you imagine anything? I mean, I love the way the Americans do radio. I really, if you're listening in the States, love to talk with you about anything, really. It's 0344-499-1000, 44 country code, drop the zero off the beginning of that, and we will call you straight back, so you're not going to run up a phone bill. But, you know, American radio is you hear some of the greatest voices there. You know, see, if you want to hear big, deep voices, they're the ones that I was brought up on. Then that's the kind of place. And you hear these people, you think, you cannot be for real. You know, what do you have for breakfast? Probably lots of black pudding to get a voice that's like that. But there'll be people doing traffic reports. And, you know, over here you've got people doing traffic reports and they'll say, well, it's looking quite bad on the overpass today. There's going to be a big delay. It might take you longer to get into the office today. So, you know, if you're seeing it, we're not seeing it, call this number now, will you? In America, you've got, this report is brought to you with Streamline Bedding Systems. If you want a great night's sleep, you know where to go. They'll give you an 0800 number. Then they'll say, well, we've got a fender bender on the 48. And in Los Angeles, they've got a thing called a SIG alert. And I have no idea what, if you're in California or you've been there, you know what a SIG alert is. It's not cigarettes. Apparently, I was told by a guy, I said to a guy at a radio station, I said, what's a SIG alert? He said, well, Howard, it was named after a man called SIG. Now, I don't know whether that's true, so I want to know what a SIG alert is on the roads of California. If you know, it's 0344-499-1000. If you're in the United States, then it'd be good to hear from you. And Israel, who's in Mexico, mentioned him last night. It is confusing. I do know. Israel in Mexico. I asked you to call, didn't I, when you got in touch last night. You say you're working at the moment, and you can't, but you are listening. So Israel in Mexico, nice to know that you're there. So there. CJ says, if you're into that sort of emergency broadcast theme, check out the last broadcast on YouTube. It's a one-hour fake broadcast set in the 80s, which pretends that the Cold War went hot. Well, I think that's one of the things, CJ, that jingle is all about. Because if something awful happens, like an asteroid is heading this way, then they'll go to full emergency broadcast system. And they'll say, you know, you got to kiss your ass, which is a small horse, goodbye. probably.
There was somebody called Sig.
Was there?
Wikipedia says so. In 1955, a guy called Lloyd C. Sig Sigmund. and it's amazingly, it's true. It's any unplanned event that causes the closing of one or two traffic lanes for 30 minutes or over.
Hang on, give me that again.
What, the name or?
No, the definition.
So it's any unplanned event that causes the closing of one or more traffic lanes for 30 minutes or more. That's okay. A SIG alert.
Is it?
And it's named after somebody. So there you go.
Well, that makes a lot of sense because, you know, what would we say on the radio in Britain? We'd say, well, it's an event that closes a carriageway for 30 minutes or more. Whereas in the States, they'll say, we've got a SIG alert for you. That'd be that. Thank you for explaining that. There is a radio station in San Diego called KOGO. K-O-G-O. KOGO, AM 600, KOGO, and they do all that sort of stuff all the time. There's a guy there called, if he's still doing it, a news guy there called Howie Castle, Howard Castle. He's another one of these people with those big, he's a news guy with a big voice like that down there. Fab. You know, and I did a couple of, I went to cover the what was it, the second and third anniversaries of 9/11, and got to know a lot of people who went through all of that in New York. I was broadcasting live for two different stations in different years. And, you know, I got to know the way that they do things there. And one of the big newsreaders in America is called Karen Chase. Now, if you get the chance to hear Karen Chase reading the news, I have never, and she is my newsreading hero. I had the great good fortune to meet Karen. We met in a Starbucks in New York. I'd interviewed her, and I'd always wanted to meet her. And she said, okay, Howard, I'm off shift at whatever time it was at ABC News across the States. And Karen and I met on a lovely sunny afternoon after I finished work covering this very somber event. And we talked about news and voices and the difference between the way they do what they do there and we, you know, and they do it here and we do it there. You know, she's the greatest, slickest writer of news and broadcaster of news. What a voice. Wow, a voice to die for. So we sat there in Starbucks having a kind of voice admiration society. You know, she'd say, I love your English accent. And I said, Karen, your voice is... And we just walked in the sunshine around New York sharing stories. It was the loveliest day.
She sounds like you should have had babies together.
I think she's been married four times. I think she's husband number four now. But lovely woman. And maybe three. Very, very nice person. And we shared a complete professional syncopation or whatever it's called.
Syncopated.
Yes, obviously sycophancy. That's not true. Syncopation.
No, that's something completely different.
Stuart, you're very true about this, and I'd forgotten all about this.
What?
One of the things that not only Kenny Everett, but also Tarrant created was a cult that nobody outside the southeast of England will know about. There was a song called the Hobart Tasmania Song, which is on YouTube. Kenny Everett was the first one to find it, and Tarrant picked it up. And it's a silly song, which is a jingle, about a place called Hobart in Tasmania, which is a lovely place, I'm sure, but I don't think an awful lot goes on there. So to hear this big American song that goes, wonderful town, wonderful people, places to go, things to see, Hobart, Tasmania, that's my wonderful town. And then it goes to list the things that Hobart has got. And it's got, Hobart has the River Derwent, Hobart has Mount Wellington. Hey, I tell you, do you think, will we be allowed to do this then, Hayley?
Well, if we can find it.
For Stuart, who remembers the Hobart Tasmania song that I think we're going to make famous across the UK on talk radio, check this out. You will laugh your socks down.
Wonderful town, wonderful people, places to go, things to see. Hobart, Tasmania, that's my wonderful town. Homes, schools and churches, entertainment, places to shop. Hobart, Tasmania, that's my wonderful town. Hobart, a center of transportation, business and banking and industry. Hobart, a center of communication, the home of Radio 780.
Hobart is great to live in and work in,
a friendly and happy place to be. Hobart, Tasmania, that's my wonderful town. Hobart has the River Derwent.
Hobart has Mount Wellington.
Hobart has the bridge, guns that flow.
And Hobart has Radio 780.
Hobart has colleges and schools,
the State University.
Hobart has the best, but better yet,
Hobart has Radio 780.
Tudor, Pope, and all in Huon Valley, Channel and Eastern Shore agree. Sandy Bay South and Glen or Pino, they like Radio 780.
Well, Chris Tarrant, if you're listening to this, or anybody who went through that generation, that is just amazing, isn't it? That is how you make a little place sound like it's big. Hobart has colleges and schools. Okay.
I love it. I feel like we should, but wouldn't it be amazing to have one for, like, I don't know, somewhere like, Sunderland or somewhere like that's just doesn't sound as sexy. That's what we need. We need like a English version of it. That's what
well,
we need.
Well, where
to
would
find.
You do though? Scunthorpe?
Yes, somewhere like that. Or Morecambe.
Morecambe, Lancashire.
Yeah.
That's my wonderful town. Morecambe has an Eric Morecambe statue. Morecambe has a beach. We could do it. If you are you a muso? If you're listening to this now and you've got a home studio, why don't we do a Morecambe version? When I was a little boy, there was a comedian on television on a show called The Comedians who used to say, I'm not saying Morecambe's dull, but when people die, they stand them up in the bus shelters to make them look full. That's true. What was his name? Do you remember his? I'm sorry, that's making me sound 1,000 years old now. Oh, hang on. We've got Shane in Sydney. He says, Howard and Haley, that's the first time I've heard the Hobart Tasmania jingle, and I've been to Tasmania. Well, you haven't lived, Shane. You know, 7HO. It's called HOFM these days because they're a little more funky. But that was, they used to play that in the 60s. And we found it here and made it into something that was iconic. People used to say, come on in, Chrissy, play the Hobart jingle this morning. And we would. And we all knew that, you know, people here think that I'm nuts. Because while that was on, I was singing every single word with it. And I haven't heard it for 15 years.
Brilliant. I actually want it as my ringtone.
No, I mean, it's you know, it's of its era, we have to say. But then so am I, really. Oh, boy. Chris C. says, Howard, have you heard of Art Bell in the USA? He used to do unexplained things on radio. Chris, where have you been? Art Bell, my absolute hero. Sadly, he died last year. And the story of my life really is how I nearly got to work with Art Bell. I got talking to him, and he had a plan. And the plan was to do three shows. He'd be the one in the middle, the main event. I would do a show that led up to him and promoted him. And then somebody else, Richard C. Hoagland, would do a show after us. And I would do that from the UK, but across America. This is a true story. And sadly, Art retired. He had one of his numerous retirements, but it was the last one after that. And then sadly, Art got sick and is no longer with us. But Art was the pioneer of broadcasting like that. He had, and again, one of those amazing voices. But another reason that he was my hero is because he is the man who said to me, Howard, don't go down the path of mainstream media. Okay, you need to do your own thing. And if it hadn't been for him, I wouldn't have learned about microphones. I wouldn't have learned how to podcast. And I wouldn't be doing this show here because the podcast got me on talk radio. And the podcast is still running at a website that Haley won't let me mention, but might be theunexplained.tv. Paul says, first time ever, Bill Mitchell. Jingles. There was a guy who did jingles and on every radio station in the country and loads of TV ads as well. Have you heard of Bill Mitchell, Haley?
No. Heard of Phil Mitchell?
No, Phil Mitchell.
It's a different one, I'm guessing.
Leave it, Grant. Grant, leave it. No, Grant. You're barred. Oh, no, that's somebody else. Bill Mitchell was a guy who had this voice here. Do you remember him? He used to do commercials. I mean, he made a fortune for commercials.
Sounds painful.
Well, no, his voice was really like that. You know, he'd say, Big Mac and fries, please. You know, he'd make it sound like $1 million. The guy was huge in the 70s. Radio stations would use his voice just to say the numbers of their frequencies, right? I mean, this is deep, deep Anorak territory. But you will remember this. Whichever bit of the country, Bill Mitchell made a shed load of money doing jingles for everything from, you know, Pennine Radio to Capital in London. You know, they used to say, and all he would do, and he would make loads of money just for saying numbers. So he'd say, 1, 9, 4, like that. Because I tried, we didn't really have a budget for jingles for The Unexplained. You know that show on Sunday? So I did do some of my own for it, and I messed with my voice and put it through a processor to make it sound different. I don't think the boss was too impressed, though, because I never heard anything more about them, but I did. I thought, will people know it's me if I slow it down and put it through lots of funny effects and go, The Unexplained with Howard Hughes? Would you know that was me?
No.
All right. Thanks, Amy.
It's a bit scary, though. I don't
it's a
like
bit Barry
it.
White.
Yeah, I don't like
I got
it.
Into trouble once playing a Barry White song. I was always in trouble on the radio, though. But when I worked for a certain corporation, they were a little, they were worried about everything. So I would play Barry White. And Barry White had a record that went at the beginning. He says, one ticket, please. Right. You know that one? Baby, baby, what am I gonna do with you? Barry White, you know.
I don't know if I know that one. I know a lot of them.
Okay. Well, my listener will know. You know the Barry White song where he's supposed to go, he's going to a train station and he says, one ticket, please. Well, I was working in the Thames Valley on a radio station and I was always taking the proverbial out of the music. Okay. Nothing much has changed, but I was working in the Thames Valley and Barry White starts the song and I'm a lot younger than I am now. So I didn't care. Still don't care. But Barry White sings, one ticket, please. And it's a really poignant moment. You know, he's leaving his loved one or whatever he's doing. But one day I played it and he said, one ticket, please. And I came over the top of the record with Maidenhead Return. I thought it was funny. I have to tell you, my boss at the time didn't. But, sorry. So that was Bill Mitchell. Bill Mitchell was a man who had a voice like that and used to make an absolute fortune doing radio commercials. I can do his voice. That's not a burp. That's me. I can do that voice. But it hurts my throat if I do it for very long. You know, but if you ever want a jingle, Haley. Haley Hayes.
I know where to go.
On talk radio. Hey, man, she's cool.
I find that a bit freaky. I don't know.
You don't like that?
Not to say anything.
No? Well, of course, there was the guy who played... I mean, if I want to go back a little bit, of course, I can't remember any of it, but there was the guy who played Kojak. Remember Kojak? Telly Savalas. You remember he was baldy head? He did. Telly Savalas played a TV detective. God, I'm sure I can't be that.
Me and
old.
Amy are just looking in confusion.
In the 70s and 80s, there was a TV detective called Kojak. Please tell me I'm not the only person to remember him. Played by an actor called Telly Savalas, who had a voice like that. And Telly Savalas became a heartthrob. Some women thought that his bald head was, you know, it. And so he made a record in this country. And he did a version of, you know, the song If. If a picture paints a thousand words, So he went into a studio. I mean, it was like what Tarrant used to call a shameless bank raid, because it wasn't difficult. He just had to read the words. If a picture paints a thousand words, then why can't I paint you? The words will never show the you I've come to know. That was a number one hit a long time ago. Sorry, somebody's just saying here, Sonny, you're quite right. Is this Howard Hughes show or just an impression show? Very true.
Who knows?
I don't know. We're not going to do any more impressions tonight, Sonny, and you're dead right. We're going to talk about very serious topics because we're very serious people. Do you not think so?
Haley, you've glazed over. I don't really feel that serious, but I can be.
No. Anyway, that actually started when we were talking about Art Bell, who was, just to say that he was my hero doing this kind of show. So you're right about that. I did mention a little while ago about we don't seem to get on with each other the way that we used to do. Mm. You know, that man on the train who sat down, he was hot and bothered like I was, and he was so pleased to sit on the train, he looked up and he said, thank you, Jesus! And we both laughed. David says faith is at an all-time low, says David. So David would be right with the man on the train. You know, that people need to believe more in whatever they... The trouble is, though, David, what do they believe in? You know, would you want to believe in our current crop of politicians? I don't know. I mean, I'm merely asking the question. Question may have to be asked. But, there are so few things to believe, or people, indeed, to believe in these days. But maybe I've just been around the block too many times. What do you say, Haley?
I don't know if it's about that. I think it's about human connection, isn't it? It's just we're all stuck on our mobile phones all the time. We don't connect with people.
There's a great video that appears on Facebook sometime of a very sad tune. And there's a girl and a young boy. And they are desperately tugging people's coats and trying to get noticed for help. Mm. And everybody's looking in their phone. It's so sad. There's a bit of Spanish guitar music in the background. You might have seen this one on YouTube. I think it should have been shared more times than it has been. And it's been shared millions. It's a black and white cartoon, and all these people are just ignoring these two kids. And in the end, the girl is so distraught that she throws herself off a building. I'm getting emotional now telling this, because it's the truth of what life is like now for some people. She's so down about how these people are ignoring her because they're looking at their phones. Mm. She throws herself off a building. And as she comes down from the top of the building, what are the people below doing? They're videoing her falling.
Gosh.
Now, that is what they call, I mean, we don't have to be serious, it's Friday night, but that's a metaphor for our times, isn't it? I think we need to have a campaign, really. We need, number one, a campaign where we say we're not going to take it anymore, and number two, a campaign where we try and be nice to people. You know, a guy did, and I know we've got to get to commercials again, but a guy did, and it was the smallest thing, a nice thing for me this week. You know, I am Mr. Bargain Basement. I'm wearing entirely supermarket clothes tonight, and I'm proud of it. I've got supermarket socks and undies on. My entire kit comes from a supermarket and probably costs no more than £25. You know, no bling for this man. I can't afford it. And I was going to one of the pound shops locally to get some essentials, okay? And they sold me a carry bag, but I put too many things in it, and it split. So I went into a shop in Kingston. And it was a phone shop, Samsung, I think it was. And I first of all asked the assistant there, I said, look, I've got three Samsung phones, can you help me with it? Have you got a carrier bag, please? Could I buy a carrier bag from you? So he went to look for one to give me. In the meantime, there was a guy sitting there, and this is the point of the story, okay, I'm getting to it, having his phone repaired. He took some things that he'd bought from his own Tesco's carrier bag and said, your carrier bag split, your need is greater than mine. Mm. And I said, can I give you 10 pence for that? And he said, it's yours. Somebody will do me a good turn one day. So the point of the story is this. If we all did something like that man, we have a saying in Liverpool, I was made up. Do you know what I mean by that, Hayley? Yeah. I was made up for the entire day because that man gave me a 10 pence carrier bag and stopped me embarrassing myself on the streets of Kingston. If everybody did something nice like that once a week, how good would this world be?
Beautiful.
Don't you think so? Yeah. Are we going to sing? This is Howard Hughes with Hayley Hayes. 0344-499-1000 is our number.
No nonsense, no prisoners, no substitutes.
Howard Hughes on Talk Radio.
And all the roads we have to walk are winding. And all the lights that lead us there are blinding. There are many things that I would like to say to you, but I don't know.
Liam, what's going on, Noel? Have you got 50p for the tram chuck? Yeah, I'm not all right then.
The Gallaghers. Lovely. Do you remember Mike Flowers? Hayley, do you remember him?
Wasn't he the one in that film, The Spy Who Shagged Me?
He might have been. No, that was Austin Powers.
Oh,
Austin Powers. No, Mike Flowers was a guy who did a kind of pastiche version of that song as a kind of ballad, as a serious ballad. And he was like, and baby, you're going to be like sort of Sinatra-style-y.
Yeah.
I think Amy's looking for it. She's very good at doing this. Sonny, thank you for clarifying, Sonny. I was a bit worried that I was doing too many of the impressions there because I get carried away with myself and it's not good. He said he loves them. Thank you very much. But I do need to cut back on them, I know. Shane in Sydney says, I love Telly Savalas in Kojak. See, people do remember. I was in high school when that came out. I mean, I don't know, when did it reach Australia then, Shane? It was on here in about 1980, I think. Bill Mitchell says, Dave was very big with land-based soul radio pirates. I remember them. Bill Mitchell used to do jingles for everyone. But it didn't matter. If you were paying, he would do them for you. There is even, I don't know if you know this, Dave, there's an LP that I think I've got somewhere, because I've got them all, of Bill Mitchell saying random numbers. So literally, if you wanted your date of birth done in numbers, or if you wanted your little radio station on 539, done by Bill Mitchell, you just find the 5, the 3, and the 9, you put them together, and you get 539. But I don't think he used the words talk and radio, though, because if he did, I'd have put them together. Talk radio. I'm told by Amy, because she's brilliant, she's found, this is Mike Flowers. You won't remember, I interviewed this man when he was at the height of his fame. I think this record went to number one at one point in about 1996, and I interviewed him, and this is the song.
I'm sure you've heard it before, but you've never really had a doubt. I don't believe that anybody feels the way I do about you. All the roads that lead us there are winding, and all the lights that light the way are blinding. There are many things that I would like to say to you, but I don't know how. Maybe, are you gonna be the one that saves me? And after all, you're my wonderwall.
That was a hit, right? And Mike Flowers came into the studio dressed in full 70s garb. So he was dressed like there was somebody in the 70s called Jason King who had a tash and used to wear all that 70s wide lapel stuff. So he came in wearing a camel coat, flared trousers and all the stuff. And he just said, yeah, man, no, we thought fantastic. And he had two hits, I think. That was one of them. And they were both sort of pastiche. And you'll notice that that's got old-fashioned record crackle dubbed over it to make the CD sound like it's an old single. And that Wonderwall was an old song, but it wasn't. You never knew that, did you?
I do now.
Yeah, I see you. Jamie says they've never heard of Kojak. What the hell's going on, says Jamie. Well, I agree with you. What is going on?
I apologise.
No, it's all right.
That's all I can do.
Well, you look, I'm only here for, in Liverpool we had a phrase, if you didn't do something for very long, you'd say, he only came here for a dog watch. Which is apparently, it was my grandmother who used to say that. It was like not very, he was only around for a dog watch. Well, I'm only here for a dog watch and then it's back to Ian on Monday. But, you know, I hope that I've kind of educated people, you know, on things that they may have forgotten. Either that or I bored the pants off them. It's hard to know. But there you go. I saw it's another impression, isn't it? With the old DG. What else are we going to do then, Hayley? Come on now.
Well, I like
oh, I tell you, on Twitter.
Oh, go on, Twitter. Yeah. Oh, yes.
Well, could we Black,
we've had a
Black
tweet
Putin
in.
Because
last night we mentioned that you live quite in the dark ages. I mean, last night, I think before we get onto Twitter, last night you were telling me when we got in, I said, oh, do you want to get some food? And you said, oh, I tried to get a soup last week, potato and leek soup in the canteen. It's just round the corner.
Tell that story on the radio.
It's just so funny. He said, I tried to get one. I took it up to the till, but then I couldn't pay. I'm like, well, what do you mean you couldn't pay? We've been here, how many months have we been in this building now? Four or five months? Since March?
3 months, yeah.
3 months, okay. Yeah. Long enough.
Whatever.
Long enough. Oh, I don't know. It wouldn't work. I couldn't do it. I'm like, you don't use cash here. It's all on card.
Well, listen, there are those what appear on my show on Sundays, which I don't talk about because you told me not to, which may or may not be called the unexplained, who believe that the move to the cashless society is part of the global conspiracy and that it's all the elite who's doing this.
Yes.
So I still use money.
Yeah.
I'm about the last person who does. I get all these people in front of me. And listen, I know technology. I make a podcast. I know about things. You know, I'm not foolish. I'm not as green as I'm cabbage looking, you know, as we used to say.
And you can also use Uber now, can't you?
I can
that
use
was
Uber.
The other revelation this week, wasn't it?
All right.
I mean, we need, it happens in threes. So we need a third. Oh, the third one could be Twitter, couldn't it?
Well, it could be Twitter. But there's been it's not my technological inability to do it. It's just the fact that I think that we live in a world where everybody's expected to have an opinion about everything, even when they don't. You know, and that's why I haven't been. But if you insist, but we've got to find an handle for me. So should we put it out to my listener?
An handle.
To find me an handle, a fork handle.
Should we put handles.
Fork handle? Fork handles. Handles for forks. I'm sorry, just had a mental image there. If my listener can think of a clean handle that I could use, then maybe we'll register. Should we register a Twitter account?
Yes. Well,
maybe.
I'm going to challenge you to.
All right. All right. Well, maybe I'll go away and do it, and I'll become whatever my listener decides. So this is your challenge. If you want to tweet, because you've got Twitter already, aren't you, clever? At Talk Radio. If you want to text, Talk, and then a space, and your message to 87222. Whatever your idea is for a Twitter handle for me, a fork handle, then I'd be very pleased to hear. And listen, I've done a lot of talking, so I want to get to some calls. Should we go to Rainbow George? Can we get George on?
Go on then.
George, what's going on? How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. And you?
I'm all right, George. We heard both our life stories last night. Is there more to add?
Oh, lots more, yes.
Okay. It's the end of the world, isn't it? And you're going to tell us when it is. Yes, exactly.
Well, I do think we're coming up to dramatic times, and I'm just feeling a bit nostalgic hearing you talking about Capital Radio, because I first called into Capital in early in 1985 and had a conversation with Mike
Smith. My friend.
Mike Dickens.
Oh, is it Mike Dickens? Mike Dickens, the absolute doyen of Talk Sport, our sister station. And if Talk Radio had been on now, then he'd have been on Talk Radio. He'd have been on this spot. If you don't remember Mike Dickens, and George, you clearly do, we both do. I knew him personally and professionally as well, and he was a big, gruff man who was a pussycat. He had a heart of gold, and what he'd say, if people phoned, he didn't have any time for bull, so if people phoned up and said, Mike, how are you? And he'd say, the state of my health is not in question. And he hated people with caravans. He couldn't stand caravans. When he was, in his days on TalkSport, he would do a whole hour on I'll tell you how good Mike Dickens was. And we don't want to be harking back all the time, but I think we just need to remember this. I used to do a version of that show on Sundays, which used to be on TalkSport on Saturdays years ago. I devised it, came up with it for them then, before it was a podcast. I was on Saturday nights on TalkSport from 8 until 11 p.m., and one of my tasks was to hand over to Mike Dickens, who would be doing the show from his home in Cornwall, right?
Yeah.
And I would have to have a conversation with Mike Dickens. And if Mike Dickens had wanted to at that time, he could have torn me to pieces. And he was always lovely and supportive about everything. He was nice to me, off air and on air. And we had the same running joke every single week. He used to say, Howard, I can't do his voice. He had this fabulous, gruff voice. But he'd say, Howard, if that psychic you had on was so good, how come they couldn't predict the winner of the 3:15 at Ascot? And that's all. I don't know, Mike. You know, we'll get him on next week and find out, shall we? And then he would take, you know, he'd save me and take it over from 11 o'clock. That's how good he was. Am I right, George? Am I right?
I had 5 calls with him on Capital, and then the last one was too much for him. And he didn't take my calls anymore. But the first call, I said this was early 1985, and I was predicting a future cashless society. And he said to me at the end of the conversation, I don't think we're ready for you yet, George. I think you've been born too soon. And the second conversation, they were talking about extraterrestrials, and I called in claiming to lying. I claimed to be in touch with extraterrestrial intelligences. I think it's the only time I've ever lied.
Are you admitting that you told a porky?
Yes, yes.
Why did you do that, George?
Well, I'd had a communication.
I'm asking non-judgmentally here, but...
I'd had a communication for about 6 months.
So you had a communication from extraterrestrials. I'm confused now.
Yeah, no, I believed myself to be in communication with a friend of mine who had died a few years.
Was your friend an alien? I'm sorry, I don't want to make light of that.
No, he died, and he's... In my mind, his spirit had gone home, essentially, because I suppose us all to be spirit beings suffering from amnesia.
Well, I think we are spirits in a material world.
Yes.
Yeah, but which great sage said that then? Oh, it was Sting. It must be right.
Madonna said that as well. Material
we are
girl.
Spirit. Yeah. No, that was Material Girl.
Oh, Girl, sorry.
Thumboy. George, listen, thank you very much for coming on. Was there anything else you wanted to say before we must depart for commercials? Quick.
There were lots of things I wanted.
Well, no, time for one. We've got time for one. I don't want to push you here. Do you want to phone a friend?
Sorry?
It's all right.
No, really thought we could have a good conversation.
Time's winged chariot. I've got a producer here who I have nicknamed Rottweiler. If I carry on talking, you know, she said, Howard, you know, I'm not going to put, at the end of last night's show, she said, Howard, I don't know how to say this. And I said, well, look, just give it to me straight. I can take it. I said, we're friends, Haley, it's okay. She said, well, Howard, I'll tell you the truth. You've got verbal diarrhea. So...
Back in 1985.
Mm-hmm. Was that when Sergeant Pepper taught the band to play?
I'm not sure. I don't think so. Peter Cook, my friend and neighbour, there was a point in time when he thought I really was a prophet and could see the future. And there's
a I'll tell you, do me a favour then, because I've got a feeling that you are a bit prophetic, George, and it's nice to, I mean, we've known each other for the thick end of 30 years, off and on the radio, so if you are prophetic, predict for me the next time I will be on doing this and you'll be on too. And I'm going to leave you with that. You can send that to me, George, but we've got to move on, I'm afraid, because otherwise I am going to be in a world of trouble. Just a couple of suggested Twitter handles for me. I've got one from Penguinland, double H. That may be used elsewhere, and it may well be parked permanently at some point, but we might use that, who knows. Who's this who says this? L says, loving the show. Thank you. Loving the show, Steve. What else? Lou, Howard something, I can't read that.
Howard Hot Stuff Hughes, somebody said.
Oh, who said that? Is that my mother?
Your mother.
Hot Stuff.
Howard Hot Stuff, that was from CJ.
Thank you, CJ.
Yes.
I'm forever in your debt. I think there was one other down here.
Lou says Howard has landed.
Well, but yes. The Oracle. I like that one, the Oracle.
I'm sure that's a shopping taken already. Centre.
I'm still not convinced by any of them.
No, I need some more.
Double H maybe, but I think that's been done before as well. Oh, we'll have a think. You can help me with that. Did we mention the guy who said he was going to make a song for us, by the way? We didn't, did we? Did we mention him? I've forgotten. There's a musician, I think he's in the Northeast, who says that...
Nick
in the Northeast,
Nick,
I think you are.
Nick Morfitt on Twitter says he's a musician listening to Scunthorpe.
Not Northeast, okay, further
Jingle,
down.
Is it not Northeast?
No, it's further down.
Oh, okay. Come on. So now. He's a musician listening to Scunthorpe. Jingle challenge accepted.
Right, Nick, if you can do that, maybe
in the
easiest
next
way.
Hour.
Yeah, if you can knock something up in the next hour, you're a genius. If not, then you can always send it to me through my website. The address of which I'll give at some point in the show, but not right now, otherwise I'll be in trouble. This is Howard Hughes with Hayley Hayes on Talk Radio. Our number 0344-499-1000.
No nonsense discussion.
Howard Hughes
on Talk Radio.
Howard Hughes across the nation here. Learning the art of using my life as preparation for a radio show and nothing else. And it's been quite interesting. I'm in trouble, though, because we've had people queuing up to get on air, and I haven't been going to the calls because I've been gobbing off, and I'm really so sorry about speaking so much. I think what Haley said last night was probably right. So let's get quickly Paul on now. Paul, listen, I'm sorry, mate, to keep you waiting. Where are you?
I'm in Leicester.
Okay, what's going on with you? What would you like to say?
The
floor is yours.
I'm all right, but I'd just like to talk about something that happened to me when I was in mental hospital.
Okay. You know,
I just got up in the morning,
uh-huh.
Sat down.
Yes.
And because I'm epileptic, I had a petty mouth. And...
You had a bit of a turn, in other words, yeah?
Yeah. No, but before then, I'd seen this... member of staff walking, bend over a lady patient there, stand up and walk out. Then came the petty mal, and I opened my eyes, and the woman was trapped there in the chair. The chap walked in, bent over the woman, and just for something in her ear, and they both stood up, and they both walked out again. So it's a repetition of the same event.
Okay.
Does that count as palm travel?
I think so. Do you know who that person was? Was it somebody who worked there?
Yes. I was in as well. I didn't see it as doing it. By his time passing.
Okay, and of course you were not in a position to do anything about it, were you?
Yeah, but even though I was having a petty mal, it was experienced by me. And so the I was moved slightly forward in time.
Mm. Do you think you moved in time?
Yes.
Forwards in time. Well, that, I mean, that's possible. You know, perceptions depend on the workings of the brain. And if the workings of the brain are affected in any way, then your perceptions of what you are seeing and experiencing, I mean, just being serious for half a tick about that, you know, they may be different. We all experience the world differently anyway. You know, that's just the difference between human beings. So listen, how are you now?
I'm all right. It's not the same chap who was attacking me. But it's most peculiar in the place I've gone to. This place is strange to me. I wanted to, as conservatives have said, I wanted to leave the mental health system to get away from it.
But you're out of it now. Is life better now, do you think?
No, he just conveyed me to a different form of the same type of trap and punishment in the mental health system. It's in the mental health system, in other words. I haven't been let out, and I don't understand why.
So you're still in the system, Paul?
Yes. Effectively, yes.
Okay. Do you think that if you look back like 10 years, are you better than you were 10 years ago, mate?
Well, at the moment, I'm 58 years old. Mm-hmm. I'm still in the mental health system. Going slightly senile, probably.
No, I don't think so, talking to you now. That doesn't sound that way to me at all. I mean, the most important thing is always that you're getting the kind of help that you need, and not only the kind of help that you need, but the kind of help that's up to date. And you've got to push for that all the time. You know, I remember, I mean, it's nothing like you've had to go through, but I remember having, you know, repetitive strain injury, which you get when you use computers too much, and I was in agony. I couldn't do anything. I couldn't lift a suitcase. I couldn't go to work. It was painful to drive a car. And I eventually, because the surgeon who treated me had heard me on the radio, he invited me to come in, because I got in touch with him in desperation. I was in so much pain with this repetitive strain injury. And if you've got this by using computer keyboards, please be careful and get help with that. And in the end, the point for the story for you, Paul, is that this surgeon that I saw who helped me and got me proper physiotherapy, I said, why did you see me? He said, you're my favorite newsreader. And that's how, I know that was kind of jumping the queue, but he did that, and I was grateful for it because I was going to lose my livelihood. This is a true story. 20 years ago, I was going to lose my livelihood because of the pain that I was in. And I'll always be a bit kind of stiff when I'm walking and stuff because of the injuries that were done at that time because we didn't understand computers and the risks. But the point of the story for you, Paul, is that I asked this guy, you know, why did you see me? And he said, the people that I see are the ones, and the people who get treated are the ones who shout loudest. I quote. So if you're not getting the help that you need, Paul, please make sure that you do, and talk to those people who are treating you and say, are you giving me the latest and the best? Because you deserve it. Okay? And I'm sorry that's slightly serious, but that's the truth, and I feel very passionately about that. And my experience was nothing like his. Kyle in Rochdale, my old mate, my old mucker, how are you?
Well, I was going to say, how are you, baby?
That was Telly's. That was Kojak, wasn't it?
That was it. That was his little catchphrase, wasn't it?
It was Who Loves You. It was
Who Loves You, Babe.
He used to suck lollipops.
He did, but I never worked out why he was doing that.
No, they made a comedy record that was a kind of your intake of him.
Yeah.
And it was Yin and Yang, and they did a kind of pastiche of that funny song. And it began with, the producer was Barry, and Barry was saying, are you all right now? We're going to record you now. Okay. Yes, Telly. Okay. Fine. And he said, do you want a lollipop? Before we start, does Barry want a lollipop? Does anyone want a lollipop? And then he did his, if a picture paints a thousand. People who didn't know anything about that, people who weren't around then, they have not lived, Kyle.
Well, I think, Howard, but I have got a worse song than that for you, but I did So obviously,
it's not Joe Dolce. Shut up in your face, is it?
No, no, it's worse than that. But I might have completely forget. My thing last night about Google listening in. Right, I want to forget that. That's okay. But I do want to point out what I think is the worst song, and also call Hayley to task if that's all right.
All right. Well, do you want to do it? Since you know I'm feeling a bit under the cosh tonight, why don't we have a go at Hayley first?
That's not fair.
Well, I was going to say. Well, I think the song I thought of was "Wandering Star" Lee Marvin, which is truly a dreadful piece of music.
Oh
but
yeah.
It goes. You know that one, Hayley?
Yeah, it's bad.
Lee Marvin was a very tough movie star. He was in a lot of sort of Korean War movies and stuff like that. But he had a big, deep voice. So there was some... What was the musical? Can you remember, Carl?
Paint Your Wagon.
Paint Your Wagon.
Oh, yes.
And he did this thing. He couldn't sing, right? And neither can I. So I'm in perfect position to tell you what it was like. But it was... was born under a wandering star. And he'd go down at the end of a line, and I think, how the hell do you get your voice that deep?
Some unkind people, I mean, obviously he's done it, some unkind people would say that he was like half cut when he did that.
Well, no, I don't think I think the story about him, though, it's all coming back now.
That's what the Pogues sound like to me.
Well,
At Christmas, I hate the Pogues.
The reason he had that voice was apparently that... Well, the story I heard was that he'd been shot in the bum.
That affects your voice, does it?
I think he got a bum full of buckshot once, and he ended up with a voice like that. So, you know, that's why he was standing up when he sang the song. I was born under a... It was like... and at the end of it, he can't get the last words out. So it ends with... It's a wandering star. It sounded like he slowed down. It's bizarre. It sounded like he was chewing gum.
To get the last note, surely you just shoot him in the bottom again, wouldn't you? Right, we need it to hit this high vocal. Come on!
I don't know, really. Some people have benefit from a kick up the backside occasionally, I find. But I don't know. And listen, if you've read that story and you're listening to me now, tell me if that was just an urban myth or whether that was how Lee Marvin obtained the voice that he had. How did we get here, Kyle?
I don't. Well, it was
worst song.
It was a very quick call, but also it was the bit for Hayley. Yeah.
Oh yes, yes.
Like, I'm sorry, Hayley, but I've come up with the ultimate for our breakfast, which I make. I've got it. I don't really want to make a little list. I can rattle through it for you if you wish.
Yes.
It's got to be sausage, bacon, mushrooms, black pudding, fried bread.
Oh yes.
Toast.
Yeah.
Hash browns, grilled tomato, baked beans.
I was just going to say, where's the baked beans? And then you brought it in right at the end, and now I'm happy.
I'm skillful. You see, but no eggs, because I don't really like them.
Oh.
But no eggs? No, I can bake with them. Weirdly, I can make meringues with them, but I don't...
Did you say meringues?
Yeah, I can make meringues, I can bake cakes.
I had a friend who used to call them meringues.
What?
He used to go into the shop because he didn't know any better. And he used to say, have you got any meringues?
It's true.
It's absolutely true. We were all ignorant then.
But, so that was it. But obviously, black pudding does make the list. And the fact that you don't eat it, Hayley, well, you're wrong. No, that's right. I'm not saying you're wrong, but that's just wrong, mate. You need to eat it. It's good for you.
I might try.
Well, look, I mean, if you think about it, within spitting distance of the place that we are broadcasting from, and this is what you would call a posh gaff, which is close to the, you know, the top locations in London, there are fine hotels, five-star hotels, that tomorrow morning, this morning, you know, in 6 hours from now, whatever, will be serving, you know, black pudding.
Yeah.
And, you know, if it's good enough for the toffs, then it's good enough for us.
Should be good enough for me, yeah.
I would say.
The best one I was going to say, am I right? So it's not a brand. It is, well, I used to work in London. There is a cafe. Am I allowed to name it? I'm not on the payroll, I promise you.
Yes,
you can name it.
You're going to praise it, aren't you? No, it's fine.
But weirdly, I think it's in loads of films because it's still quite 60s-ish. So they use it in loads of films in an external set. But it's called the Regency, around the corner from where I used to work. The Regency Cafe, world famous. And they make the best fried breakfast ever.
Is that in the world ever?
Just in the world ever. I would happily go there every day and have my breakfast.
Oh, God, I'm hungry now.
Well, no, I'm getting a bit hungry now.
Because I've been doing these late nights. I've been eating garbage. I was eating... I mean, you know, I shouldn't be doing this. Because I used to be as thin as a lath, as we used to say. And, you know, crisps, part of my downfall. I was eating crisps and soup today, Kyle.
Oh,
and that's just so bad for you, isn't it?
Soup is good for you.
Well, with crisps. I don't, when I was a kid, I used to float the crisps in the soup. Do people still do that?
You can put, you can get those microgreens, which apparently are trendy now, and just cut them and sprinkle on top of your soup. But it's a bit too much green for me.
No, my friends keep telling me it's, you know, I should be getting into quinoa or what? What are they? Quinoa.
I've never tasted it.
You know a lot about this, Kyle. We should do cooking with Kyle.
Well, do you know, I'm always.
Have you got a recipe? Another thing that somebody in a Liverpool shop once said. She said, do you want the tomato soup? We've got the new recipe in. That's true. Along with the man who ran a fishing club who said, nobody's won that trophy here since 1910. Carl, we're running out of time, my friend.
No, I was going to say really quick. When I used to work in a record shop, somebody did come in and say, have you got that opera by Turnedot? Like, do you mean Turandot?
Like, yeah, it's all good stuff.
Thank you, Howard.
Thank you, Kyle. Take care. We are Talk Radio.
No nonsense discussion.
Howard Hughes on Talk Radio.
We can go on together with suspicious minds, and we can build our dreams on suspicious. Say hello. Would I still see suspicion in your eyes? But here we go again, asking where I've been.
Oh, you knew I'd do that, didn't you? Now, the bad news is Elvis has left the building. And the worst news is that Howard Hughes has just entered it. We are Talk Radio. Love to talk to you tonight, because I'm not going to get a chance. You know, The Unexplained is a lot of topics and a lot of guests. That's what makes that show on Sundays that I'm not allowed to mention because Hayley's here. That's what makes that show. Thank you for the coffee, Hayley. She's trying to get the top on one of our sippy cups here. And for some reason, it's the wrong size.
They're the most annoying
cups
ever, aren't they?
It's the wrong...
And the reason we have them is because they don't want us to spill drinks over the buttons.
But they're so sloppy in the way that they fit.
So hard to put the lid on that they actually do the opposite of what they're trying to achieve, because getting the lid on, it means you spill everything everywhere.
I'm going to do a local radio now, okay?
Go on.
And you know, they say local radio, local radio is a wonderful thing. It's a dying art these days, but they'd say, if you've got a way of getting the top on a sippy cup properly, give us a call now. Oh, actually, they don't say give us a call, they say giz a call.
Oh, giz a
call. Giz a call. Giz a call now. But that's true. I've got this thing in my hand, right? And it's full of beautiful, thank you for this, hot black coffee, because I'm a caffeine freak. And it's got a rubberized top that you can kind of do Al Jolson with if you want. If you're not on video, you can't see me doing Al Jolson here. Some famous old comedians, Morgan and Wise. But it's supposed to be rubberized, and you're supposed to be able to, like, fit that on top like a sort of gasket.
But you can't.
And you can't. You can't get it on. Which means it defeats the entire object. You know, which brain box thought of this cup? Oh, here's a good idea. We'll devise a cup that we can use in radio stations. It's got a special rubberized top. And if you use that cup and you put it on properly, then you won't spill your lovely hot coffee all over our expensive equipment. What's the flaw in that, though? The ruddy top does not fit on the cup. I mean, what? I mean, sure, look, we don't want to. You know, I mean, I won't mention the maker. Were they designed here?
I don't think
here?
There is a make, is there? There's nothing on it.
No, it just says coffee cup. And it says, what does it say on the top? It's rather like those famous fast food apple pie things, containers. It used to say, caution, these containers are hot. No, give me a break. No, something Sherlock, as they say. No, it says, caution, contents hot. Well, they are hot if they go all over over the equipment and all over your hands. I'm sorry.
Anyway,
some things make me
mad. I did try to put the lid on, but I...
At some point, we're going to talk before we're out of here. You know, I'm on the road again. That was a song. We're going to talk about my little campaign to get people to vent their frustration. Yeah? because we've got. I mentioned the movie last night, and if you haven't seen this movie, it's got to be part of your bucket list. Okay, it's called Network. Stars a British actor playing an American character called Peter Finch. Peter Finch was a fantastic actor. I think he won an Oscar for this. And he plays a newscaster whose name is Howard, who, and I can sympathize with this feeling because I did news for years, just got sick and tired of it all, right? And one night he goes on air, and I'll keep it short because I told the story last night. One night he goes on air, and he goes off on one. And they realize in the control room he's going off the script here. And he starts, and then he says, I want you all to just put your head out of your window and shout, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore. Now, by the end of it, the bosses at the television station, and this was a networked program, hence the name Network, actually said, this man is getting ratings like we've never had before. He is going nuts on air. Let's keep him on. It doesn't matter if the poor man's mental health is collapsing. Keep him on. So he becomes like this messiah character, preaching every night, getting people across America. And in the film is people from New York to San Francisco, leaning out of the window shouting, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take it anymore. So I get frustrated sometimes with the stuff that happens in this country, not only politically, but in many other ways. And I don't think people have got a way to vent. So I'm not inciting people. Please let's not say that, because we, you know, regulatory, we can't do stuff like that. But and I wouldn't anyway. But I'm not inciting. I'm just suggesting that as a vent, you might want to come up with something like that, where we all together get together at some point, and we say, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take it anymore. And then you go back about your business, but you've got rid of all of that angst and stress within. And we've got the recording somewhere. We won't play it right now, because I've got something else to do. But I just think it would do people such good. Because we all need, you're looking very sceptical, Hayley H.
I don't like anger. I like being angry.
Well, it's not anger. It's just venting.
Venting.
Do you never ranting. Get naffed off about anything?
Oh, yeah. I've had a good rant. Mm-hmm. Oh, my God. You've never heard me well, rant.
You haven't,
I can have a rant.
All right. Let's get to Rick. Okay. Rick Davey. I'm a big fan of The Prisoner, the famous old TV series, because it was 52 years ago, and a man called Patrick McGoohan, who was the actor, come director, come writer, who devised The Prisoner, came up with something that is what they would probably call a metaphor for our times. He talked about a surveillance state where cameras are watching you every time. You go anywhere. If you go home, there are cameras on you there. The messages that are put out to you are sanitized, and life has become like that. Let's be honest, quite a lot of the time, that is what life has become. It's become plastic and intrusive in a lot of ways, in my opinion, we have to say. You know, it may not be like that at all. I may just be wrong. But I think that Patrick McGoohan was years before his time with The Prisoner. If you've never seen the series, check it out. Rick Davey is a man who runs a website called Six of One. Now, Patrick McGoohan's character, who was in this place called The Village, where he was incarcerated, he was number six. Everybody was numbered. And today, we are numbered. You phone up a place, no one's interested in you. They keep you on hold. They put you through menus. Most of it's automated, and nobody gives a stuff about you. When was the last time you phoned? Now, look, I may be maligning call centers, because I know that there are some good ones, and I have spoken to some nice ones. There was one in Liverpool a month or so ago. I had a nice conversation about Liverpool with this one. It's a rarity now. No one cares, because we're just automated and filed and stamped. So Rick Davey is online to us. Rick, thank you for doing this. Somebody who emailed me suggested you to come on this show. So I can't remember who that was who suggested you, but I'm very grateful. Thank you for coming on.
Hey, you're very welcome. It's very nice to speak to you. Just one quick thing. The website I run is actually the Unmutual website. I'm not involved with Six of One.
I'm so sorry.
It's a different website.
Yeah,
equally valid, I'm sure.
So tell me, well, absolutely, I'm told it is. The Unmutual thing is very important in the show, isn't it? Because that is just like social media today. If you are doing stuff that's not approved of in The Village, then you become unmutual, don't you?
Well, exactly. It's kind of a metaphor for just being an individual, not playing the space game, as it were. I mean, you were quite right with how you described the series. It was a great magnifying glass on society, which was relevant then, but even more relevant now. And I think you're right that Patrick McGoohan was a genius, because everything he put into The Prisoner is exactly where we are in life now. We live in the village.
Well, we do. It's a global village, and some of that is good. I mean, look, I wouldn't have been able to build a podcast without the World Wide Web and the technology that's around that that's allowed me in my little flat to create something that is heard from Timbuktu to San Francisco to Sydney. And, you know, people are listening to it all the time. So that's a good thing about the technology. But the thing that Patrick McGoohan, who created that series, foresaw was this society where we are numbered. We are, what was that phrase that he used? I will not be stamped.
I will not be pushed, filed, stamped, indexed, briefed, debriefed, or numbered. My life is my own.
That's it. Just say that again.
I will not be pushed, filed, stamped, indexed, briefed, debriefed, or numbered.
Now, you ever think about those words? I'm talking to my listener here. Don't you think that we are? Don't you feel sometimes that if you want to, like, I don't know, if you want to make an inquiry about your mortgage, for example, assuming that you've got one, or you want to call a council or something, you used to be able to pick up, all right, call me retro, call me out of date, whatever, but you used to be able to pick up the phone and you could speak to a person. And that person would be human, would empathize with you a lot of the time, and would understand your situation. Does that happen now? That's what Patrick McGoohan in that series was trying to indicate, that we're becoming a society of anonymous digits.
That's what? Exactly right, and he is right. That's exactly what has happened. And as you said, he picked up on things like CCTV everywhere you turn. Fake news is covered in the prison, and fake news is only a term that we only think of it being the last couple of years, but he perfectly played that. They covered the elections in the series. They covered mind control, brain surgery, all things which were really unheard of in the 60s. And when people first saw the prison, they felt it was this fantastically futuristic thing that possibly couldn't happen. But it is exactly what happened. The society today is exactly the society that McGoohan had predicted in his television program. Mm. And how many television programs really do make you think like that? It's a fantastic series that you can watch on two levels. Sure, it's a great action-adventure series on one hand, but on the other hand, it's a fantastic allegory for life. And I can't think of another TV series that allows the viewer to think like that.
Yeah, but the problem with it was people didn't understand what it was at the time, and for decades later they were still figuring it out. And the man who created it, Patrick McGoohan, never really, well, didn't do many interviews and didn't really explain.
No, he didn't, and he was a very private man, and he did some great things afterwards. You probably remember his appearance in the film Braveheart with Mel Gibson. He was great in that, and he did some stints on Columbo. But really his career kind of didn't go too much further after that. He went to live in the States and kind of semi-retired, if you like, and only came out for a few roles. But you're right, no one understood it, and that angered him. He wanted people to talk about it and get angry. As you said, he wanted people to vent. The prisoner was his way of venting, if you like. He had things to say, so he made a TV series. You have things to say, so you present shows on the radio and podcasts and so on. And it's interesting that you said about that. Where can people go to vent? Maybe that's what the internet's for, in a dangerous sort of way. But what Patrick McGoohan was doing was he was venting. He was saying, this is what's happening to our society. Unfortunately, the people that watched it at the time, or a large number of them, didn't understand it. And the switchboard at ITV was red hot when the last episode went out, of people phoning up and complaining. So much so that Patrick McGoohan had to flee the country. And his own words were, I felt I was going to be crucified.
Because it was just, I mean, you've got to try and remember what was on the TV at that time. And I would imagine there'd be like Morecambe and Wise on the TV. But it was all simple, gentle stuff. It was an innocent era. And people really didn't, apart from books like 1984 and things like that, people didn't think that way. They didn't think that there was that kind of surveillance agenda. That was for spy films. It wasn't for any kind of reality that anybody could relate to. So the fact that the TV series was trying to tell them that was lost on many people, I think.
No, I think you're exactly right. And I don't think there's been a series like it that's done it since either. I think there have been a series that which have been inspired by The Prisoner. Series such as Lost, I don't know if you remember that show, but it threw down a huge sort of gauntlet of make something interesting on television, and no one's really done it since, I don't think, anyway.
No, I absolutely agree. Do you think that they could ever remake it, to try and make it relevant to, well, it is relevant to today, but to try and make it something that, you know, people, young people today, could take on board?
Well, an American channel called AMC in 2009 did do a six-part remake of the series, starring Jim Caviezel and Ian McKellen, and it just fell flat on its face. And the reason it fell flat on its face is because it's very hard to remake something which was of its time, but also was so forward-thinking. It's very difficult to do that. The reason that The Prisoner worked is that it had a genius coming up with ideas. He had people around him that were very clever people. And it was almost happened by accident that the series was made in the way it was. You can't make something by accident on purpose, which is what they tried to do and they remade it. There's talk of it being done on film. I think Ridley Scott has got some sort of proprietary rights to make a movie version. And they've talked about various names like Will Smith, Christopher Eccleston, various people have come up. I don't think you can remake The Prisoner. Sure, you can do things that have similar themes. I know that there's a series called Persons Unknown a few years ago, which dealt with similar themes. Wayward Pines is another one, which I think was a couple of years ago. But I don't think you can remake The Prisoner, because it was something which was so unique. I think just trying to remake it would be like all the other remakes. You think of all the films that have been remade in recent years, they're never as good as the original. Mm. I think it would definitely be true. I think that's true.
I mean, you only got to look at series like The Avengers, and they tried to make a movie. And I think from memory, the movie bombed.
It did. And they did the same with The Saint. I don't know if you remember The Saint series with Roger Moore was a great series. They tried to do a movie version with Val Kilmer, I think it was. That didn't go so well. Think of the film remakes they've done. They remade The Wicker Man, that classic British film. They remade that with Nicolas Cage. And it just wasn't the same. The Prisoner is a fantastic series. And other than the odd haircut, the odd bit of clothing, the odd car that you see, it hasn't dated. It's so relevant that trying to remake something which has perfect relevance, it's just a waste of time, in my opinion.
Well,
I'm slightly biased, being a fan of the original, of course.
Well, no, I'm a fan of that, too. I was at Port Myrion, where they made the series. That was the village. And while I was there 2 weeks ago, they had a convention of people. That car that Patrick McGoohan had, it was a Lotus, wasn't it?
Yeah, Lotus 7, that's right. Yeah. You were there when they were there with all the...
There were about 12 of them there. It was just incredible to see. Sadly, I couldn't get a ride in one, but it was great. It was an amazing place to be. Talk to me about the fan experience then, because you've got this website, the mutual website.
Yeah, that's right. It's Prisoner fans are incredible. They're probably second only to sort of Star Trek fans and Doctor Who fans in the passion that they have for the show. You know, there are conventions that are held. We organise events at Elstree Studios down in London. We've got one in October celebrating all the ITC shows, not just The Prisoner. But people are really, really dedicated to it. They make the replica costumes. There's some guys called Pigeon Guard Games, and they make replicas of all the sets and buildings and paraphernalia that you see in the series. People buy the vehicles. You mentioned there that the Lotus 7s. People buy the Caterham 7s and make it the same colours as the one in The Prisoner. They get the Minimoke taxis.
Little Minimokes. One of the guys there was telling me that they're going to have one of those back there at some point.
Yes, that's right. I think they're going to sort of ferry people to and from the hotel in the village and have it, with the original striped canopies and everything in the same colours. But, the website I run... it's basically a chance for Prisoner fans to go online without having to pay any money. We cast and crew interviews, news about what's happening with the actors and so on. Sadly, Patrick McGoohan, as you know, has passed away, but there are other actors that were in the series that are still alive. And the most important thing is that we raise money for Hope House Children's Hospice, so it's all in a good cause as well. But Prisoner fans are very dedicated. For a 17-part episode, I think, a 17-episode series, I beg your pardon, I think it's astonishing. Over 50 books have been written about the series. I can't think of any other series where 50 books have been written about it. And the series only had 17 episodes. Doctor Who has got hundreds of episodes. Whether it has 50 books written about it, I don't know.
Yeah.
But Prisoner fans, you get some Prisoner fans in a room, and there's always something to talk about, because every episode has what you see on screen, but it also has so many hidden meanings, and that was the genius of McGoohan, is that he gave you a great plot to watch and a great 50 minutes of action adventure, but he also gave you so many different things to pick up on and think about.
I think it was unique. I mean, look, if you're listening to this now and you can tell me another cult television series that had an impact that's similar to that, I'd love to know about it, because, a lot of them I've forgotten, simply. But if I think about series that had an impact on me, I don't know, really. I recently watched reruns of a series called Callan that starred an actor called Edward Woodward. My parents liked it when I was a kid, and I didn't understand it. I would just go and play and do something else when it was on. And I bought the DVDs of Callan now, and that is relevant on so many levels to all kinds of stuff today. And he was a downtrodden Secret Service agent in the Cold War era, having to do all of the dirty work that other people in the agency didn't want to do. And it was brilliantly played by Edward Woodward. And, you know, if you watch it, it's got a lot of foresight going for it. But beyond Callan, The Prisoner, I can't think of very much, really. So if you know, speaking to my listener here, it's 03444991000, if you know of series, maybe they changed your life. Maybe they've got a message in them that we need to be bearing in mind today. You know, I'm beyond that. When I was a kid, the big thing was Thunderbirds, but I can't think of any particular message that was in that. Apart from the fact that Lady Penelope was really cool. Did anybody really speak like Parker? Rick Davey, thank you for that. Just give a plug to your website before we go.
Oh, that's very kind of you. It's www.theunmutual.co.uk. Also on Facebook, Twitter and Instagram, just type in Unmutual website and you'll find it there.
I'm not even going to repeat that. That was so good. Rick Davey, thank you for that.
Thank you. All the best. Cheers.
Thank you. Howard Hughes on Talk Radio. So there you go. If you're into your cult and classic telly, then maybe you want to talk with me about that. But if there's anything that I haven't addressed tonight or last night, you know, anywhere we haven't gone, then we can do that. We've got the world stretching before us. Before, who's on after me, by the way, tonight?
Martin Kellner. He's outside prepping as we speak.
Oh, is he? He's doing it very quietly.
Just have a little chat.
So we've got 40 minutes or so before Martin Kellner erupts. So if there's anything that you want to raise and bring up, then I'd be keen to hear from you. If there are any questions that you want to ask me about anything, if I don't know the answer... That was one of the first things I was taught in radio. If somebody phones up and they say, you said so and so, what was that about? Don't say, I don't know, because it makes you sound like a dumbo. So you have to say, I'm not sure, but I will find the answer. Please, may I take your number? People don't
hold
do
the
that
line
anymore.
Caller.
Hold the line caller. People, there's another thing that people don't do anymore. Howard Hughes with Hayley Hayes here on Talk Radio, 0344-499-1000 is our number here.
Controversial conversation and outspoken opinions.
It's Howard Hughes
on Talk Radio.
There's a starman waiting in the sky. He'd like to come and meet us, but he thinks he'd blow our mind. There's a starman waiting in the sky. He told us not to blow it, 'cause he knows it's all worthwhile. He told me, let the children.
David Bowie on Talk Radio in the night time. And I know it's going to make me sound like an horrible name dropper, and I don't want to be, but life has allowed me to meet some important people. I met David Bowie.
Did you? Where?
It was on a radio station. It was with Chris Tarrant. He came in on the show, and they said to me, you can ask him a question. Go on, Howard, ask him a question. And he was a lovely man, very cool, very quiet. You know, he didn't have to raise his voice. He just had presence about him. So I thought, okay, what can you ask David Bowie that he hasn't been asked a million times before? And I thought, I know exactly what it was. Because I used to go around the office going, hello, I'm David Bowie. Here we are. Ha, ha, ha. He, he, he. I'm the laughing gnome, you can't catch me. Because he was influenced by a man called, what was that guy's name? Anthony Newley. You know,
right.
Who sang a little bit like that, so David Bowie, incorporated a bit of the tremolo, and it was all up here. So I said, God knows where I got this from. And I thought, he's either going to be really angry, or you'll understand where I'm coming from, if I did. I said, David, what's it like hearing people all the time doing impressions of you? Because, you know, everybody goes around saying, hello, I'm David Bowie. And he said, what's it like having people doing impressions of Howard Hughes? And I just thought, game, set, and match to Mr. Bowie, I thought, you know, that was, and I haven't got a recording of that.
That's brilliant. That's a shame, isn't it?
Mm. I met Kylie Minogue, you know.
Oh.
She's very short. She's absolutely lovely. Not only is she beautiful, but she's also a lovely person. You know, Kylie is just like your friend down the road. She's got no star.
She's like your neighbour.
She hasn't got that kind of, what do they call it, the patina of a star about her. She's just like an ordinary person.
I tried to make a joke there, and you and Amy just completely blanked
me. Oh, sorry, just like an ordinary person, you said.
No, just like neighbours.
Oh, just like neighbours, sorry.
Both of you just completely looked at me like I'm talking Chinese.
I'm sorry. You're not, are you, though?
I don't think I could.
I can teach you.
Well, if you want.
But no, Kylie was very nice. I'm sorry, we're not talking about people what I've known over the years. But you know, you'd be surprised sometimes by the things that people names. One of the things, of course, I have to live with, the cross what I have to bear. Now, you're an HH, but you're Hayley Hayes, and that's okay.
Yeah.
But I have got the name, and it's my real name. People think it's like a stage name, but I've got the name of an eccentric old, you know, American millionaire. Yeah.
I wish.
So it's Howard Hughes. So people would say, oh, Howard Hughes, I bet you haven't got his money kind of thing. And yeah. If I go to America, the guys on passport control think that I'm having a laugh. And they call their friends over. They say, hey, we've got Howard Hughes here. You know, let's check his documents. Hey, Howard, have you got a few dollars to spare? So the point of action on this, the action point, as they say in company meetings, the action point on this is, have you got a name that's unusual or famous, but you're not that person, if you know what I'm saying? Have you got a name that sometimes makes people smile? My sister worked with a man called Richard Head. Really, his business card said Richard Head. Mm. That was him. And his friend, of course, his friends called him Richard, which is quite appropriate, but it's many, many years ago now. So if you know anybody who's got a funny name, or you have a name that people laugh at yourself, and you can give me some pointers on how you live with a name like that, then I'd be very keen to hear from you. It's just a thought.
Sometimes we get text in, don't we, from, like, Bend Over.
Do you?
Yeah, we do. People try and get you to read out funny names on air.
Has Ian ever done it? Have you ever done it?
I've been on a few shows where presenters have read it without reading it through first.
Okay.
It's rather funny, I find.
I think that's only ever happened to me once.
Oh, yeah, what was it? Do you remember?
Oh, I can't remember that. It's probably too rude, but I didn't know because I was just innocent.
Sure it wasn't. Exactly. People don't read stuff.
Of course, you do know. You do realise that we are encouraging people to do that now, so please don't do
it.
Because we've heard it.
The funnier the better.
Okay, then.
Come on.
Oh, so if they come from Bend Over, you're going to read them.
Well, we've done that one already. I think if we get that, I think it's a bit lame, really.
Okay. What was the Benny?
I think we could do better than that.
Well, the Benny Hill one was good. He was doing a football commentary, and the goalkeeper was Huge Arse. J-A-R-C-E.
Yeah.
No, not good. No, right.
Well, I think I'm really hoping we can do better than this.
All right then. Yeah. Okay. What does Dawn say? Hello, Dawn. Dawn, why didn't you phone up? Because it's only us. Go on, give us. If this is Dawn in Derbyshire, in the High Peak, then give us a call. Go on.
We can change your name.
Yeah, well, we'll call you anything.
We won't call you Dawn.
But Dawn is really cool. I mean, Dawn does a very valuable public service job, but is also a fan of my podcast, you see.
Okay.
And, yeah, she says, Dawn says, if this is the same Dawn, that is, The Prisoner was a work of genius. I'm really enjoying your show. Love to you and Hayley. From Dawn, kiss, kiss. How about that? Oh. Now, hey, Joe... That's very good. Joe, are you Joe Prestatyn or Joe in Prestatyn? I know Prestatyn. Well, it's a fine place. It's visible from Liverpool on the North Wales coast. Iconic series that made an impact. Space 1999. Yes, that was good, wasn't it? Was that a Gerry Anderson series? I'm asking generally. I'm not sure about that. I think it probably was. I know Jamie Anderson, Gerry Anderson's son. Sorry, you were saying?
We've got the Scunthorpe jingle.
You haven't?
Well, I've got it on Twitter, so I need to run next door and see if we can get it on the computer.
Okay. Have you checked that it's not rude, then?
Well, that's what we're going to do.
Since the word is Scunthorpe.
We'll figure that out. But we've got a jingle, so do you mind if I just depart for a second?
No, it's fine.
So we can
you
try
know,
and figure
I
this
can
out.
Talk forever, really.
I'm sure Amy will be figuring it out quicker than I will.
Don't worry about deserting me. We have to admit...
Just be careful with the coffee. I left you alone for 10 seconds.
We're talking about... They've insisted here in this... And I can understand. Look, I mean, this is... We are now working in Bling Central. This building is so smart. It is... It's almost like... You know, I keep expecting to walk down the corridor and see Lenny Henry in a bed. It is so smart, this place. It's like a hotel. But they insist, in case we spill coffee or tea over any of the expensive equipment here, they insist that we use these sippy cups with rubberized tops. The problem is that the rubberized tops don't fit, and there is more of a risk of spilling it over yourself if you're not careful than would ordinarily be if you had an ordinary cup. While I was talking to Rick about The Prisoner, what you didn't see was the hysterical sight of me tipping coffee almost all over myself, but all over the desk here. Don't worry, boss. None of it went in the equipment. It's all right. But that just goes to prove my point. And miraculously, we were talking last night about miracles, miraculously, none of it went down my front. You know, there's another thing we can talk about, right? Embarrassing things that you have done that you wish. I know it's an old topic, but we can give it a new spin. Embarrassing things that you've done, moments that you'd really like to forget, but people keep bringing back up because they were so funny, right? I have a thousand. Do you want me to tell you the story? The story of the biggest embarrassment of my life?
You tell the story while I go next door and figure out this jingle,
okay,
yeah?
All right, then. Most embarrassing moment of my life to date. I arrived in London, and I was starting to get known doing the news on that radio show that I won't bore you talking about again. But they said, how would you like to present an award at this award ceremony? Well, I have to say that I am still very shy, right? But I did the job of presenting the award, or I agreed to accept it because you couldn't say no. And it was for charity anyway, so you certainly can't say no. So even though I was terrified, more than terrified, I agreed to do this thing. And the job was to present an award for comedy in that year to Paul O'Grady in his Liddy Savage phase. So I thought, okay, he's from Liverpool, I'm from Liverpool. He will definitely come on in drag. So when I present the award to him, I'm going to bend down and kiss his ring on his finger, okay? And then people will laugh. I was so terrified and shaking that I was almost not able to see anything. So we get into this thing and I say, ladies and gentlemen, the award for comedy 1996 goes to Paul O'Grady. Everybody applauds. And Paul O'Grady comes on not as Lily Savage, but as Paul O'Grady. But because I'm so terrified and because I haven't got a plan B, I actually lean down and he is wearing a ring and I kiss the ring on his finger. Which must have looked, well, did look, and people still talk to me about it, the most embarrassing thing. And the funny thing about that was that for a couple of years afterwards, they do talk about it now. Nobody referred to it. So that was my most embarrassing moment in front of an awful lot of people. And that was just because I was scared. And, you know, they say the people who do what we do for a living here, you're not supposed to have fear. Well, I can tell you, if you're doing something like that for the first time and you are just a kid and you're not quite sure how to do it, it's terrifying. I mean, in later years, I learned to do things like stand on the stage at Hyde Park, at Party in the Park, and speak to 100,000 people. And I used to do that with very minimal nerves. But, you know, anyway, embarrassing moments, things that you have done you wish you hadn't done. Another one is when I went to work for a radio station in Brighton. And again, I was just a kid. And I walked into the studio and the guy on air called Chris, can't remember his second name, said, oh, Howard, there's a big red switch in the corner there. Can you do me a favor? Can you just put that in the off position? So I said, yes, Chris, certainly, because I was, what did I know? So I put the switch in the off position and the radio station went off the air for 15 minutes. It was the master power switch and he was having a joke. The only problem was that I didn't know anything about it. So that was an embarrassment. And I don't think the boss ever forgave me for that. His name was Bob, and it was in Brighton. And I turned the radio station. Yeah, Amy, behind the glass here, doesn't believe that I did that. I completely turned the radio station off at that time. So that was my embarrassing moment. If you have one of them, 0344-499-1000. On that show on Sunday night that I do here, that Haley's barred me from talking about, by the way. We're going to be talking cryptozoology. We'll have the man talking about Canada's Bigfoot on here. And we'll have a man talking about coincidences, of which in life there are many. And Nick Pope will be talking about Donald Trump and UFOs, the latest news on that. And also a plan that some people have to storm Area 51. And I think we can get to a call now. Hey, because this is talk radio, and that's the kind of stuff that we do. Have we got the jingle, by the way, Hales?
Nearly.
Is it rude?
Oh, no.
Okay. Is it good?
It's okay.
It's okay. All right, then. Well, Nick, thank you for that. I mean, bearing in mind, how long did Nick have to make this jingle?
About an hour. And a half.
He had an hour I think. Yeah. All right. Well, I think, another one of my impressions here, I think that we're able to go to another call. So with a bit of luck, if the fates are smiling upon me, I think we're going to go to Mike. Are we going to go to Mike next?
Yes.
Okay, let's go to Mike. We have Mike. Where's Mike? Amy, are you there? Oh, no, he's got a problem with his phone. What are you saying, Amy? So I'm getting different instructions from different people.
Oh, no. Can't get the staff. Hey,
here's another suggestion of something that's cult, but this is a cult movie, Blazing Saddles. Do you remember Blazing Saddles? No?
No.
Starring somebody, I think, who was called Hedley, not Hedy Lamarr. It was a comedy western. I never actually saw it, but there were loads of commercials for it. We will be getting Mike on in a moment, by the way. And then eventually Martin Kellner will be here. We'll talk about his show through the night, and then I will fade away. And prepare for that show on Sunday night that I can't talk about here. I'm sorry, Hayley.
That's all right. I was going to, before you spilled coffee all over yourself and
I didn't. That was the point of the story. I didn't spill coffee over myself.
Anyway,
at all.
While you were doing that, you were playing my favourite song, Elvis Presley, and I was Suspicious Minds, and I was going to thank you for it, but when I was listening to it, I walked in and saw you spilt the coffee, and it kind of spoilt the moment, really.
Yeah. So, Suspicious Minds.
Favourite song ever. Like, ever.
Why is that, then?
I like the build-up. So I don't know if you've seen the Las Vegas version, when he's getting a bit fatter, he's mm-hmm. in the white suit and he's sweating profusely.
Well, I can sympathise with all of that.
But when he gets to the bit where, like, the crescendo, and he goes and he kind of moves his arm like that, which doesn't make any sense. Yeah, anyway, I just love the crescendo in it. I love
Are You
it. Yeah,
Lonesome?
Really, cool.
I like Are You Lonesome Tonight. Oh. I like the laughing version. You know the laughing version of Are You Lonesome Tonight?
I know the jokey sing, version with the
Do
lyrics.
You gaze at your bald head and wish you had hair? But Elvis then realises how funny that is and he can't stop laughing. It's still funny. Tina, you're on talk radio. How are you, Tina?
Hello, I'm all right, thanks.
Which is all good, Tina. What would you like to say then, Tina?
You know you said about the names of famous people that you know?
Yes.
Well, I work in a crematorium,
uh-huh.
and we have a Pamela Stevenson, a minister.
Okay.
We have a Father Michael Jackson.
Okay.
And a Father Liam Gallagher.
You have a Liam and Gallagher, do you?
We have a Liam Gallagher and a Father Ted.
Father Ted. Do you have a Father Jack?
Unfortunately not.
Well, you need to be getting one of those. Hey, listen, almost more important than those names, and they're pretty good, including Pamela Stevenson, Tina.
Yes.
This crematorium, are you allowed to tell us what you do there? I mean, if it's gruesome, spare us it, but
I could do. I'm a crematorium technician.
Are you? Does that, I mean, look, I'm looking at my producer here for guidance here, because we don't want to be too gruesome. But,
I cremate the bodies.
Oh, do you? You actually control? I mean, look, it's a fact. People don't talk about funerals and death and all of that stuff. It's like a big taboo. But the fact of that, I don't know what the percentages are in this country, Tina, but I think probably, 50%, 60% get cremated these days?
Oh, I'd say a good, more about 80%. Mm.
So
yeah,
it's the way that we, you know, face facts, it's the way that we're all going. And it's a process, and most people don't want to confront the process, but you're at the centre of the process, aren't you?
Absolutely, yeah.
So how do you put this? When the coffin goes back, when people are, I've been at a couple of funerals, sadly, some of those for people close to me recently. You know, when the coffin slides back on the rollers. Does it go straight into the thing that you operate then?
No, we put it on a trolley, mm-hmm. and then we take it into the back of the crematorium, and then it goes on to a charging gear, which is the thing that pushes the coffin into the cremator.
Right.
So it all happens on the same day. It all happens sort of like immediately after the funeral.
Because, of course, people, I don't know whether it's supposed to be like that, but people who go to funerals think that once they see the coffin go and the curtains come over, then
they
that's
it. They think they go straight into the fire, yeah.
Well, because
we have that a lot.
Well, we've all seen, remember the James Bond movie where James Bond is put in the crematorium oven and the coffin goes back and then Bond is alive and he's caught in the coffin and it's burning and he's trying to get out. Do you remember that?
Yeah, it doesn't quite happen like that, no. It'd be a bit terrifying if it did, wouldn't it?
How long have you done this for, Tina?
I've actually worked in this crematorium for 2 years, but I've been doing it for about 10 years before that, and then I was an undertaker before that.
Were you? Now, look, so you are well experienced in this field. What is the appeal? You obviously love your work. What is the appeal of the job?
Just helping people, really. Mm. You know, I love the fact that, you know, you're helping their last journey.
And it's terribly important because, you know, we've all been...
It's very important, absolutely.
And, you know, when you're 30, you spend a lot of your time going to weddings. When you're 50, you start spending a lot of your time going to funerals. And that's just the nature of life, isn't it? So we have to understand it. You know, there's no great mystique about it. Do people ever come up to you and ask you to explain how your job works?
Oh, yeah, all the time, yeah. We always get, do they always go in on their own? And do you put two or three in at the same time? And do you take the body out of the coffin before you put it in?
Do you, by the way? I've never known that. Does the coffin wood, the wood of the coffin burn with the body?
Yes, Everything that goes in the coffin stays with the person and is cremated altogether.
Okay. Well, it's kind of appropriate to be talking about this stuff after midnight, really. Yeah. And people just don't understand it, do they? I had to scatter my father's ashes just over a year ago. And it was a thing that, because I was very close to my father, and I just didn't think that I could do it without breaking down and becoming a complete wreck. But I took my father's ashes to the Mersey. The bit where the Mersey opens out and you can see North Wales.
All right, lovely, yeah.
And I'm a Scouser, but originally the family came from North Wales generations ago. So I thought it was kind of appropriate that my dad's ashes I would put in the Mersey, and the Mersey tide would sweep them out back towards North Wales, where we came from. It was like the circle of life sort of thing. So I suppose the point of the story was the wind was blowing and I didn't want to get the ashes on me. Or not in the Mersey. I wanted to get them all in the Mersey so that the job was done properly. I was on my own. I was very upset. You know, I was crying at the time. You would
some
be.
Some people find that harder than the funeral.
I think it is. People have to confront this. And let me tell you, if you've got to do it on your own, and I made a special trip up to Liverpool. I stayed in a hotel in Liverpool. I took my dad's ashes back to a place. In fact, the hotel was built on a place he used to work. So his ashes were in my boot. If this doesn't sound macabre, overnight, and then I took them to the place I was going to scatter them. Those ashes, I was thinking, I'm not going to look at them, but you do, you have to. You've got to see what you're doing. What are they, what's in them? Is it all bone?
It's everything. It's the bone, it's the coffin, it's everything that's all cremulated up together. So it's everything, it's everything that you put in the coffin, including the body and the wood and everything.
Where do you do this job? I never asked you where you do this job. Where do you work? I mean, you don't have to name the place, but what area?
Malden in Surrey.
Yeah, okay, sort of southwest London, Surrey border. So you obviously it's a lot of population. You'll be busy.
Oh, we're very busy, very busy all day, every day.
How many do you do a day?
Average about 10.
And I'm sure I absolutely get what you're saying, that you're helping people, because you definitely are. But for you yourself, what's the most rewarding thing about the job? You know, there must have been a reason why you went into it, and there must be a reason why you stayed in it.
Gosh, I don't know really. I just enjoy working with dead people, I suppose. I don't know. It's a very difficult question.
No, I'm noted for them, Tina. But you know, it's important. You know, it's a strange conversation to have, but it's the right time of day to be having it. And the fact of the matter is,
it's something I've always wanted to do since I left school.
Mm. But did you ever tell anybody at school when you were there that you wanted to be, you know, a person who worked in an undertaker, a funeral director?
Yeah, definitely. My mum, I used to tell my mum all the time.
That's
the job that I want to do. Yeah.
And what about your own funeral plans? You know, how have you planned your departure?
I'm going to be scattered off the end of Brighton Pier.
Oh, that's lovely. That's absolutely lovely. Of course,
I don't want my kids to have to pay out money to come and visit me, and every time they go down to Brighton,
they'll think of you.
They can remember me.
What do you think of these people who keep little lockets of a little bit of ash and stuff like that? Do you think that's weird?
It's each to their own, really. I wouldn't want to do it, no, because I think the whole person should go
I hope it's going to be a long time before that happens, but thank you.
I hope so too, anyway.
Listen, I'm very, very grateful that you called in and we talked about this, because, what do they say when you go to church and the guy speaks there in church? In the midst of life, we are in death. It is just a reality. And, you know, we can talk until the cows come home about what happens afterwards. But for the people who are left behind, they have to deal with the practicalities of
seeing somebody
out of here. So, Tina, thank you very much. And what does somebody who works in a crematorium do at the weekend?
Work.
Oh, really? You're going to be doing funerals this weekend? Okay, well...
Yes.
Should I say have a good weekend?
I will do. Thank you very much.
All right. Tina, thank you very much. Tina in Morden there. You may think that's a really strange conversation to have. I think that is one of the best conversations that I've had on the radio for a long time. Because, number one, I learned about it. And number two, I think it's important to demystify, take the mystique out of something that we've all got to experience. Very quickly, before we get to commercials, Dawn is not the Dawn in Derbyshire that I thought it was. Dawn is probably listening. I think she's been on shift working in the NHS. This is Dawn in Kent. Well, Dawn, it's nice to have you there. She said, I'd be more than terrified than you were when you kissed Paul O'Grady's ring on his finger. It was a scary experience to get it all wrong, which I did. But Dawn says, can you say hello to Dawns everywhere? And there are many of them. I will do that, Dawn. And nice to know that you're there. And Paul is there as well. And so is CJ and Tony. This is Talk Radio. I'm Howard Hughes.
No nonsense discussion.
Howard Hughes
on Talk Radio.
Don't you know I'm still standing better than I ever did?
There is a cleaned up full HD version of that on YouTube and Facebook at the moment. I'm Still Standing by Elton John. Listen, I've loved these couple of nights. We haven't got a long time to go now, so I'm just going to say L. L's just texted in to say we haven't heard much from Amy tonight and we should hear more of Amy. I agree. She's done a great job tonight, so L thinks you're great and I do too, and thank you for seeing me through these two nights, Amy. You are wonderful. You can speak if you want to. Oh, go on.
Okay, yeah.
Okay. Am I all right to work with then, Amy? Well, I do.
Yeah, you're very good to work with.
Well, there you go.
I've enjoyed these past 2 nights.
So have I. Thank you. That's an unsolicited testimonial. And next time, if there ever is a next time, we're going to let you speak more. And we definitely need to have me speaking less. Mike in Ipswich, you're on Talk Radio. Thank you for being here. How are you?
I'm okay. My subject's probably a little bit less macabre.
Mike, are you in a spaceship at the moment?
I'll just move out then.
Okay, no, it sounds like it's okay, but it sounds like you're talking into a bin.
Is that better?
Yes, is your head out of the bin now? It's very important, Mike.
Yes. Yeah.
Sorry, what were you about to say, my friend?
My subject's a wee bit less macabre than your previous caller, which I did find very interesting. I always thought that the coffin went straight into the oven, so to speak, when it rolled back off the dais and went behind the curtain.
Well, I thought that too. I thought it was all immediate and they just, turned up the heat and that was it. And that's not how it is.
Yeah, I was referencing back to the James Bond film as well.
Which film was that? Was that Goldfinger?
No, it wasn't. It was one of the ones after. It was Sean Connery.
Yeah, it was definitely Sean Connery.
I don't think it was Goldfinger.
It may have been, was it Diamonds of Forever? It was a Bond movie. Anyway, it was a Bond movie where Sean Connery
was
committed for cremation when he was still alive by one of the Bond villains. Yes. And that's all I know.
He managed to get out of it.
Anyway,
what I wanted to talk about was The Prisoner.
Okay.
That you were discussing earlier. I'm old enough to remember it from when it was first shown on ITV. Back in 1967, I think it was.
When, of course, it will have been in 405 line black and white.
Indeed it was, yeah. And from what I can remember at the time, it really didn't go down very well.
No, people didn't get it.
Yeah, and it was pulled by the network at the time, which is why...
Are you sure about that? Mike, are you sure that's what happened? Because I think that they ran the whole series, didn't they?
Well, there was only 17 episodes.
Huh? Okay, well, I hear what you say.
Yeah, 17. I think there was planned to be 24, because you needed 24 to get US distribution. I think I'm right with the maths there.
Mm-hmm.
But because it was so going so badly, they cut it off at episode 17.
Mm-hmm.
And 17 was hurried to give a sort of ending papers to the story.
Okay.
And which is why it left a lot of viewers confused.
So it wasn't just
going
the
on.
Content of the series, it was the fact that it was run in a kind of higgledy-piggledy way, yeah?
Well, it wasn't very popular, and because they weren't getting the viewing figures, presumably they weren't attracting the advertising revenue, and the executives, whoever decided that thing at ITV or whatever, which one of the independents it was.
The company that made it was ATV in the Midlands, yeah.
Yeah, they cut production episode 17.
Well, Mike, listen, when I'm on again, we'll have a longer conversation about the prisoner, but thank you for clearing that up. I knew none of that because, you know, I wasn't really too cognizant, as they say, at that time. I only watched the repeats when the thing was in colour. I never saw it in the original black and white. Thank you for that, Mike in Ipswich, for calling us here at Talk Radio. Now, we put a little challenge out. We played the Hobart, Tasmania jingle song about that little city, which used to play on the radio in London when I worked with Chris Tarrant all those years ago, and it became iconic. And Nick, in Scunthorpe, isn't it, decided to take up the challenge. He's a musician. He had 1 hour to produce a jingle. Here comes that jingle. That was a work of genius. Martin Kellner, what do you think?
Well, I think that's the best song about Scunthorpe I've ever heard.
They say that in music, in broadcasting, in all the media, getting your message across is the most important thing of all. I think he did it. I've got no complaints on that score.
Yeah. I used to love it when radio stations all had a song. I don't know whether you probably don't go back as far as I do, but when commercial radio first started, every station had its own song.
Oh, and some stations carried on doing that and others didn't. And weird lyrics.
Yeah, well, the station I used to work for, which was Hallam in Sheffield.
Radio Hallam.
That's the one. And our jingle, our song, said you can hear us in the Yorkshire Moors. Yorkshire Moors is about 200 miles away. You'd no way no could you hear us. You know. You had it all on to hear us in Sheffield, let alone the Yorkshire Moors.
Oh, but, you know, it's funny how we haven't got time to discuss this, but we could all night. But the impact that those jingles and songs for places had. I did the voiceover on a series called Silla's Moment of Truth many years ago. It was the first thing ever like that I'd done. And we had a team of young people from Cornwall who were performing. The show was all about people performing weird tasks like, can you kick 10 buckets and stack them on your head, which a man actually could do as a jockey from Dorset. But this was a team of girls from Cornwall. And I said to them, oh, Cornwall, you've got a radio station there called Pirate FM. They started singing. They were all about 18. Mm. And they started singing from the Tamar's Bridges down to Land's End. There's a place of sea and shore. Ancient history, Merlin's wizardry, and so much more. Mm. And they knew the song. Yeah. All of these
people
things.
People did, because they all came on first thing in the morning, you know, at 6 o'clock in the morning. That song for every single morning. Viking Radio in Hull has an absolute classic song. We're going fishing in Grimsby. One of the lines. Oh, there were great lines in it. I've got the song, actually, which I might play later.
Well, you must. And if you can find the County Sound song from Guildford, County Sound Radio, the one and only one for you. County Sound, the one and only one for you. It was brilliant. It was produced and written by a man called Les Reed, who wrote songs like Delilah. It was fantastic, yes, it very slick.
And he also wrote the Leeds United song, Les Reed.
Did he? What's that called?
It was just called Leeds,
nice one,
Leeds,
Cyril.
Leeds.
Oh, Leeds, Leeds. Leeds. I remember Leeds, Leeds, Leeds. Great lyrics there.
Yeah.
Nick, listen, thank you for the jingle. Martin Kellner, what's on your show?
Well, we're talking about all sorts of stuff, as always. Are we talking about the Elgin Marbles? The Elgin Marbles obviously aren't like a little packet of marbles. They're the Greeks want them back. I've just come back from Greece.
I thought we'd given them back, okay.
No, we haven't. We haven't. They're furious about it. Well, after all these years. Absolutely furious. They want them back. So we'll be talking about that. We're obviously talking about politics because it's been a huge week for politics, but both the Tories with obviously the various interviews that Jeremy Hunt and Boris Johnson have been giving, and for Labour, that Panorama programme, we'll be talking, amongst other things, about the way Labour has handled it, which, if you're looking for a PR disaster, There's one right there.
Well, so it looks like they've let the story lead them, really. The story, yeah. They have not covered themselves in glory in terms of PR, I would have thought, Martin.
No, they haven't. Absolutely
so
not.
So big show, Martin. And big show. Nice to see you. You know I'm here every 6 months doing this. I'll see you in 6 months, then,
yeah,
the Lord willing.
Look forward to it.
Martin Kellner, after 1 o'clock here. I have loved these last couple of days, but I've got to say this. Amy's been absolutely fantastic, has been a rock. And Haley Hayes, my producer, thank you so much for being the best producer to work with in the world ever.
Oh. Come on.
My name is Howard Hughes. This is Talk Radio, and I am followed after the news by Martin Kellner. Take care.
This is Talk Radio.